To order. Right now, Councilman Spohr is not here, and Councilman Brodol, I expect them both to be here. I haven't heard that they're not, so they're probably going to show up. We started this meeting an hour early, and they might have forgotten that. First item on our workshop this evening is ordinance regarding residential vehicle review. Daryl?
Thank you, Mayor. Members of the council, good evening. For the record, Daryl Piercy, city planner. Before you once again for consideration and review is the ordinance regarding residential vehicle parking. This has been previously discussed at your meeting on October 12th, as well as your meeting on October 26th. Under direction of the council, we've added additional changes to the ordinance, and we'd like to review those with you this evening. There are 8 items that have been modified since the original text that was before you back on October 12th, and I'd just like to go through those very briefly, if I may, just to let you know where those changes have taken place and to give some of the rationale behind that. First off, there's been no changes in this revised draft to the original code section, chapter 17.61.020, which deals also with limited areas of residential parking as well as other parking issues throughout the city, including commercial sites. So that language has remained unchanged. Item number 2, throughout the document, vehicle storage, which appeared in the previous 2 versions, has now been changed to residential vehicle parking. Again, that was based on some comments that we heard both in public testimony and also comments from the council. Section 8.66.020C has been changed to allow for gravel or crushed rock surfaces on approved parking areas or improved surfaces by definition. Change number 4 is in 8.66.040. That's on the top of page 3. There is a duplicate R3, and that second R3 has been changed to R4 to account for all of the residential zones contained within the city. That was clearly just a typographical error. Change number 5, 8.66.040, item B1. The 6 feet width was changed to 8. And in reviewing that chapter, even though this was not a specific direction from the council, the 12-foot length may have prohibited a number of automobiles by that definition. So that was changed to 18 feet, which would allow for vehicles and trucks and, you know, the standard things that people drive in their everyday getting around town. We also changed city approved surface to improved parking surface. That's consistent with the definition, and therefore the language is consistent throughout the document. So that we felt that that was an appropriate change. And deleted in a side or rear yard and inserted the statement in an area that is not identified as a front yard. So again, no reference to the rear yards as instructed by the council, and the parking area only pertains, or the parking regulations only pertain to those areas of the front yard, and that's why that was changed. Item number 6, 8.66.040B3 was deleted in its entirety. This was a rather confusing paragraph in the ordinance. I think people read it different ways. It meant different things to different people. It just was a very ambiguous paragraph that was contained within the document. It really had no effect now that we're dealing with strictly the front yards, and really was not necessary to, one, avoid the confusion, and to avoid any misrepresentation of front versus rear. It was simply just removed. This is the paragraph you may recall. We had a number of discussions as to whether or not you could park 2 of the same automobiles in the front yard. And there was just a lot of misinterpretation or potential misinterpretation of that paragraph. The 7th change is in item 8.66040C. And that, where we deleted to be stored only in a side or rear yard, and again inserted the language, only be parked in areas that are not identified as a front yard. So again, the regulations would allow for parking in the side and the rear yards, as was discussed with the council. And the restrictions would be on those vehicles parked in the front yards. And the final change was in item 8.66.050C. And here we deleted the language "are in an area screened from public view so as long as the vehicle is parked in a designated driveway or improved parking surface." Again, this addressed the issue of screening the rear yard, and that is something that we were requested to remove from the document. And any reference to the rear yard, so the screening requirement was removed in this section. We believe that addresses the issues that were raised by the council, that the document is reflective of those comments. In general, it is a document that regulates parking in the front yards, does not regulate parking in the rear yards, and limits the regulation of parking in the side yards to approved gravel or approved surface, which includes gravel or crushed rock. Happy to respond to any questions.
Questions for Darrell?
Based on this, I'm still getting questions about, so how many vehicles can I park in my front yard?
You can park as many vehicles that fit in your designated driveway, which is 30 feet wide, and as many vehicles that you can park parallel to that in the on an approved surface. So if you had there is no limit to the number of vehicles. It's all dependent on the length of your driveway and the length of your parallel improved surface adjacent to your driveway, and then of course you can park on the side or the rear yards with no limitations. So that entire paragraph that talked about the number of particular types of vehicles, you know, one snowmobile trailer, one boat, one travel trailer, that has been removed. So the restrictions for the types of vehicles and the number of vehicles has been deleted, and only the restrictions only to the front yards on an approved surface, and it doesn't speak to the number.
So I'm still not clear on the limitations on the approved surface. Can I gravel my whole front yard and stick 12 cars there?
You can gravel your main driveway, and then you can gravel an area parallel to that driveway which can utilize your driveway for access. What this is limiting is the curb cut. So the idea is not to allow cars to drive on and off the established curb. It comes through a designated driveway location that can be 30 feet wide.
And then they can go to additional parking in the side yard?
Parallel and then back to the side yard.
If it has gravel or brick or...
Correct. It doesn't have to come off the front yard parking, to answer the question from the audience. It can come off, the rear yard. If you have access to your side yard from the side, you can come off of that, or you can come from the rear yard. But the curb cut is the 30-foot designated driveway to the parking area in either your garage, or if you don't have a garage, the main driveway for your house, which is limited to 30 feet wide.
So you could use the 30-foot curb cut to pull in and park on the side.
Correct.
Yard. Or if you have access from the rear yard, you can come in from the rear yard as long as you don't jump up over the curb.
Correct.
So you could gravel your entire front yard as long as you didn't cut the curb more than 30 feet.
There's
we're gonna ask for comments from the audience here in a moment here.
Oh, I thought this was more important.
Yeah. No. So I guess, Darrell, if you would like to sit down, if the council has any more questions for Darrell at this time, he'll be back and forth. He's going to be up and down.
I've got one more. It's not related to what you're doing.
Okay. Franz, you want to come up and?
Sure. I just dealt with this. Now, I mean, more questions are going to come up as we discuss this. From what I just heard, the curb cut has to be 30 feet or less, okay? So, in essence, if I've got a 70-foot wide front yard, I'd come in through my 30-foot curb cut
and park anywhere in the front yard, correct? As long as it's gravel or some surface. That's my understanding, is that correct?
Always fine.
Yeah, okay. Let me write that down. Okay, if you have a 30-foot curb cut.
Well, you just designated a 30-foot curb cut, and then you could park parallel to that, okay?
On your side yard.
On your side yard or front yard?
I think it's limited to 30-foot in the front yard.
We'll respond as it's done.
Okay, we need to get the whiteboard out.
Yeah, let me write this question down so we can bring it up again. 30-foot curb cut.
I mean, you know, you're coming in on your 30-foot curb. Now, you're going to park on your driveway plus some distance, plus you're going to have an access way that comes into your side yard, which has to be kept clear, of course. You can't really park there because that's how you get to your side yard. You know, so whatever.
Any other questions? Darrell, would you address that? Please.
Again, for the record, Darrell Piercy. The answer to his question is yes. The way the code is written and has been written, if you have an approved surface and it covers your entire front yard and you can access that from your 30-foot curb cut and it's parallel to your driveway, it doesn't provide any limitation on the width of what is parallel, then you could in fact potentially use your entire front yard for parking, but it would have to be an approved surface and it would have to be parallel to your driveway. So if you had an area that had some sort of vegetation or something between your driveway and that parking surface, that would not work because you'd have to jump the curb in order to go there. And the idea of this was twofold. One was to create some organization to the parking. The other was to stop the damage that was occurring to the city curbs into the city right-of-way. So if someone chooses to pave their entire front yard, this ordinance would not restrict them from parking on it, providing they can access it from their single curb cut.
So they could go either way. They could go to the side yard or further into their front yard.
Yeah, it did not. The code does not specify parallel being only on one side of the driveway or the other. It just simply says parallel to the driveway. So, again, if you chose to improve that surface in your entire front yard and accessed it only from your curb cut, then you could use your entire front yard for parking if that fit the circumstances.
Does that answer your question?
I'm still questioning on the parallel. I mean, I pull in my driveway and I got 70, 50 feet a yard, and I can pull in, pull down, and pull up, keep going down and pulling up to my house. Is that what it means, parallel? I can't park, my driveway goes this way, I can't pull off and park this way?
The surface needs to be parallel to your driveway. There's no requirement in the code that says how you park your cars.
Okay.
So it's only the surface that's addressed.
Well, this is too watered down for me, personally. I don't think we accomplished a thing. So people will put a truckload of gravel in their front yard and call it good, and we'll be right back to where we're at.
Ken,
you had a question? The other question I had is, where am I at here? D under 8.66.040. At one time, we had a little discussion about what is a vehicle that's operable or unoperable or whatever, or if it's somebody's jewel that they someday is going to work on that and make it into a prime vehicle or whatever you want to call it. My question is, I don't have any problem with that in the front yard, but we're back to somewhat similar to some of these things we cut out. We're referring about any place on that property. And I actually think that part of that, it says stored on the property. I think that should go back and refer to our side yards or our rear yards, and we designate whether those are going to be allowed or not. I can understand it, and I think it's a fine deal as far as the front yard, to not have them in the front yard, but I think it still leaves it open that if we ever get to the backyard or the side yard, that there's a possibility that there might be certain circumstances where that particular car or vehicle, maybe we would want to make allowances for something like that. I don't know, it's just kind of a question. But as far as the front yard, I have no problem with it. But when we say other property or other place on the property, I have a little question with that.
We already have an ordinance that takes care of junk vehicles, correct? I mean, on the property, whether
yes.
it be backyard or side yard or
And I think the problem we have is that inoperable vehicles, the type being described by Mr. Kalar, aren't considered junk vehicles. They don't meet the criteria under the state law for junk vehicles. So this was trying to regulate those that you may have a 1964 Mustang that you're rebuilding. And the idea was you have them inside a structure or you can have them for 30 days. Now, there was not an attempt to regulate those in the back or side yard, so I think we could create language that was more specific to the front yard.
And we
could certainly do that. That was your choice. There was no intent to regulate rear or side yard with that section.
I think that's probably a good point. Right now, I think if we limit this to front yard, it could not be stored in the front yard or in the street for a period no longer than 30 days. And I think there's already an ordinance to that effect on right now.
There is an ordinance that talks to the street, but not specifically to the front yard. So by changing property to front yard, I think we would address the concern.
That's kind of my idea.
I guess I, sort of with Mark there, I thought we were talking a 30-foot width, six cars, two in the garage, down the side, and a couple across the front would make 10 or 12 cars real easy. And to me, we're not doing anything but throwing gravel on top of the lawns, letting people park however they feel. So I guess personally I don't like the way it's wrote up. The idea of that whole thing was trying to make our community look, when people drive by, it looked nice and organized, sort of, especially attracting business and stuff. Hopefully we get one day here, and I don't know where we've really addressed it other than throw the gravel on the top of everything now. So that's how I see this. I'd be more in favor of a 30-foot width on the driveway. That's as wide as they can go. If they want to use the side of the house, that's great. If they want to park two cars out front, I don't have a problem with that. But, you know, they have a garage, there's a few more cars in there, but that's my view on it. So
how does this differ from the ordinance that we have in place right now, other than the approved surface?
Well, it requires the approved surface, and it requires the use of a curb cut, so you're not having vehicles drive over the curb, damaging the city street. Those are really the only two changes. And again, the language regarding the 30-foot width was not changed in this version. This has been the same requirement, the parallel improved surface. So it has been theoretically possible in all three versions to be able to park your vehicles across your front yard if you chose to improve the surfaces in your front yard. But it still would prohibit vehicles from utilizing the curb the curb for access. It would have to be accessed only through the curb cut. Can you recall some of the pictures from the early, the first meeting we had?
That's what I was just going
to
ask you.
To the curb, would not continue under this ordinance?
You take that particular residence that had 13 cars parked in the front yard and crossed the sidewalks and jumped down over the curb and partially in the street, partially in their yard. If they would gravel that, then they would be in compliance with this ordinance.
Providing they weren't using the curb to access those. They'd have to come through the curb cut and access.
But you would have to, a police officer, a code enforcement officer would have to be there and see them jumping up over the curb.
Yeah, what I suspect would happen is that we would see we see a car parked and we see damage beginning on the curb, so we would notify the property owner the actions they were taking were not permitted. And then if we need be, we try to observe it taking place. But I think in order to issue a citation, we'd have to see the actual action before we could enforce it.
Mark, have you ever measured your, but you've got the driveway, the curb cut, and then the little gravel off to the off-shore side. Have you ever measured that? Is that 30 feet wide, including the gravel to the side? Or?
I don't think it's quite 30 feet. I have not measured it, but my garage inside is 20 feet wide.
That about lines up with your driveway?
Yes.
So he's, so 30 feet, that, I mean, the way he's got it, I don't mind. He's got a driveway and then cut off to the side. He's got gravel and he parks one vehicle over there. But I think that's 30 feet wide, which to me is almost plenty.
That's, I think, about equivalent to a three-car garage, isn't it? Or a three-car driveway coming into a three-car garage?
To help put 30 feet in perspective, most drive surfaces on the city streets are probably 32 feet, maybe some up to 40, depending on how well developed they are. But that 30 to 40 foot range is about the width of a city street. So it's a pretty wide area, certainly able to accommodate three cars abreast.
My driveway is slightly over 20 feet wide, and then you have 5 foot to the end of the property. Guy next door to me has another 5 feet plus another 20 feet. If you make that 30 feet, now you got 30, 60, and 10, you got 70 feet. 10 feet per car, you can get 7 cars across the front of that without disturbing your lawn. Your problem is getting in and out of there over the through the curb cut. Now, unfortunately, where I live, why they put the mailbox thing right in the curb, but in between, so I can't drive through it. But that's not the way it works, but you still, I mean, you can go down here on 14th and find where they have done that. And you drive by there and there'd be 7 to 8 cars parked across between those two houses. And I'm sure they gotta be jumping the curb cut because they're not that far back off the road.
Yeah, but some of those places are, they can go in their driveway and then go down the side and they're from the very backyard to the front. They have 6 cars just in a line from the front yard to the backyard. I think it's
curb cut there on that one. I didn't look.
I just think it's absurd that anybody needs that many cars on their lot.
Again, the definition of the front yard is across the front of the building, right?
Correct.
Okay, so then anything that's in the side yard has to be behind that area.
That plane of the face of the building, yes.
So, but there's nothing in there that says you have to put a fence across there.
Correct.
You don't have to put a site obscuring fence across there or anything.
No, we've taken out, at the direction of the council, we've taken out all references to site obscuring fence requirements.
Well, we're just dealing with the front yard
right.
At this point.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Front and side? Or just front?
This is intended to regulate the front and improve surfaces required on the side yard. But there's no requirements on the rear yard.
It looks like for some council members this is too watered down, and for others it's intrusive. I don't know. Ken, what do you have?
I have a bunch of holes, you know. And it, last week, discussion was brought up about driving around town. Well, I spent the last couple days driving around town and hitting almost every street to see. And I made little notes as I went down and checked out. I looked at many different things to deal with our budget and looking at the different homes. It is a very, very small percentage of homes that we're talking about that are having vehicles. I've seen some that were, I've seen a couple of yards, the backyards were full. You can see them off the main street, backyards were full of cars. We have several ordinances that deal with stuff like that. I think we need to enforce what we have in our ordinances first before we start correcting. I'd like to know where the holes are that we can repair in our current ordinances without creating new ones to enforce them. A question on RVs. One of the things I've noticed is now we're limiting it to 8 foot by 18 foot. I did notice there is quite a few RVs, fifth wheels, people have. We have a lot of one-car garage homes, and they have a driveway off the front. They kind of go sit back very far. They have their RVs, and a lot of them are over 18 foot long. They're parked out in the front. According to this, this would eliminate them parking, my understanding. Anything over 18 foot, which there was plenty of room. They weren't impeding upon the right-of-way or pedestrian right-of-way for sidewalks. And we went over this probably 6-7 years ago in ordinances with RVs. And we had several meetings on it, then covering it very well. And I thought we had it all situated then. To me, I think we need to work on our current ordinances, enforcing them, and if there's little holes in them, tweak them there, like I said, instead of creating new ones. That's just how I feel right now. There's too many vague spots in this current one that we've got, too many holes in it.
I'm like Mark. This is so watered down that I would not be in favor of this ordinance, because it's nothing different than what we have right now, other than the approved surface.
Doesn't the current ordinance say they have to have 6 foot side of street fences if they're storing cars in the backyard? Doesn't the current ordinance say that?
Yes.
Good. Enforce it. The other thing is the one, I know a yard, there's a yard that's kind of raised, and you can see in the backyard, there must be 12 cars back there. And so they don't have the fence, so if we enforce that, that's fine with me, if you want to enforce current ordinance. The other problem is, I think the ordinance addresses the, quote, junk vehicles, which is defined by state law. It has to meet 3 out of 7 or whatever the criteria is. That's very difficult to establish that criteria. So I don't know if there was some way to address that or just say, I mean, if it was me, I'd say, you know, throw out no more than 4 cars in your backyard. If you want more than 4 cars in the backyard, you should move out of the country. That's my opinion. So
I think the junk car ordinance states that it's got to be, it can be, if it's only worth the salvage value or the per ton or whatever it's worth for a wrecker, could it come and get it and haul it off? It's a junk vehicle.
I don't know. Do we have to get like warrants or something to go on people's property to evaluate these cars? Is that part of the hang up?
You can follow up on a complaint. We can't trespass to find a violation. We can observe from right of way or street side, though.
What does council want to do with this? They want to. If we clamp down on what's going on, you know, there's going to be a lot of people citizens that are going to be upset. But I'm with Ken and every other one of the council members here. I guess we'll just drop the hammer. If they've got junk cars in their backyard, they're going to get ridden up. If they're in violation of any of our codes that are on the books at this present time, they're going to get it immediately. We're not messing around.
we're going to get things cleaned up. And if we have some problems in some areas, council, like you say, there's some areas that we need to fill in to make code enforcement easier and quicker and swifter, then we will come back to council for that support. Sir, you had your hand up.
I'm probably one of the violators.
Oh, you're not alone. There's quite a few in town.
I don't have the
Could you introduce yourself?
I'm Brent Reeder. I live over on Elm. I've spent most of my life in the automotive hobby, and I've collected a few that are in the process of being restored. Yes, they're stored in my backyard. I try to keep my front yard as clean as possible. I'm a citizen of this state. I'm a citizen of this community. I own my home. I pay my taxes. And when you start tweaking the codes, I get a little upset. I try not to be. But if I'm in violation of a code, let me know, and I'll correct it. And I think any other homeowner in this community would do the same thing. Given a reasonable amount of time to rectify the problem. But if you don't know that you're in violation of a code, it's really hard to comply with the code. And that's why I'm here tonight, is because I felt, why do we need a new code when we have codes in this community already? If I'm in violation of the code, then I need to be notified and give me a reasonable time to correct that, and I'll comply. And I think most citizens of the community would probably do the same thing. But communication with the homeowner before legislation is always the best option, and that's the way I feel about it.
Thank you for your comment here, and I think it's a good comment. And our code enforcement officer has good people skills, and is, but unfortunately, not everybody is like you. There are people that you can talk to, and there's no response. And so, unfortunately, then you got to go to the next step. But
I think most homeowners, if they were given the option, don't come down heavy-handed at them first, but at least give them where they're in violation of what they would need to do to comply with the code. And I think a lot of property owners would. I've had problems that delayed some of my projects. Some of them were health-related and some of them were other things, but still, I enjoy being a resident of this community. I don't want to move to the country. I enjoy living within the city limits.
We appreciate that very much, and the people that live by you or next to you or across from you, we're here to kind of protect them too. We touched on that at the last meeting, and so we've got to kind of strike a happy median here and keep everybody happy and try to keep the community as neat appearing as possible. That's what we're up here for, and code enforcement looks to be the way we need to go here, and that is what we do.
The first letter is always request voluntary compliance.
Okay. I believe we still need to do something with this. I'm with Tim. I think it needs to be 30 feet, no more than that. If we can, I mean, you can still get down your side yard. I don't see too many people's driveways being right in the center of their house. You know, they're always off to one side, so that would make it, you'd be able to get into your side yard from your front driveway. I don't agree with being able to pave or gravel your whole front yard and parking. That's not doing anything. rather than having to put some gravel there.
The way this ordinance reads now, it is 30 feet, but you can park parallel to that 30 feet if you can use that 30-foot curb cut and come in. Use that 30-foot curb cut to come into your side yard. Then you're still in compliance.
But aren't we saying you can park anywhere on the drive in the whole front yard if you gravel it, then get in and go around? You can park sideways, backwards, upwards, it doesn't make a difference, right? Mm-hmm. Is that what I'm understanding?
The restriction in the code is only to the surface, not how you park or where you park on that surface. So I think the answer to your question, Mr. Wilson, is yes. It does not restrict how you park once you're on your property and you've gone through a curb cut to get access to your property. As long as it's on an improved surface, it's allowed.
Because I personally, if I lived across the street, let's just say, and I was trying to sell my house, I would think that'd be a little bit of an issue for some people, you know, and that's why I'm saying 30 feet wide, if they can get seven cars in the 30 feet, I don't have a problem with that, but...
Well, it was the basis of why initially the ordinance had restrictions as to the number of vehicles and the types of vehicles that could be parked in the front yard, but that's been removed in this version. So we could certainly resurrect some effort to restrict the total number of vehicles and the location in the front yard within an ordinance, but at the present time, that's not what this ordinance includes. The other thing I would like to remind the council is that at your last regular meeting, you did pass a new process for enforcement that will allow for an administrative enforcement process. It will be more in keeping with the idea of working with the property owner, seeking resolution, and when that fails or does not produce satisfactory results, then we have a process of providing for an enforcement action before the hearing examiner rather than the courts. So we think we have a much better enforcement opportunity now to work with property owners and to seek resolution. And it may help us to better enforce the regulations that we currently have.
Mr. Reeder,
yep.
You said that your hobby is limited to your backyard or side yard.
Basically.
Do you get there from the back? Do you have a back entrance?
Yes.
Well, Brent?
Yes.
You're probably a good example, and I tried to use it last week in my discussions. You have a beautiful car. That Dodge is a beautiful car. It sat, though, out in front of your place for years. I drive by there all the time. Man, you'd think it was a junk rig, but it's a beautiful car now. And I know there's time restrictions that happen in a person's life. And it takes time to do these. And I mentioned that it takes time to do these. And that's what I don't think we should do. You're limited to a one-car garage. And I know your garage is a multi-use garage. You use it for many different things. And you just wheel the car in and out as you were working on it. And according to the new one, you wouldn't have been able to do that.
That's why I went back to referring about this D on here. It was the exact same reason for that, for restoring or whatever down the road.
And I recognized that it was that way. And when I was notified of the code, it got me into a mode where I had to do something with it. It was not a convenient time, but for health reasons. But I took the action to comply with code in the front, and when it came back, it was painted, but it still had to be assembled, but all the parts are in the garage. And you can't haul them anywhere else. And so it took me a week to assemble the parts right there, but I tried to get my time constraints were from 8 to 8, so I would not disturb the neighbors, and I respect our neighbors. But I had no choice of where I could work on it at that time. But if I have to do something different, that's fine. I'll do something different.
We passed, made some changes to our ordinance last week that enables us another process to negotiate with you or somebody that we're having an issue with here before it gets into courts and stuff like that to where to get this stuff resolved
quicker
and easier. And on 8.66020, Ken made the 18-foot length. If you have a motorhome and your garage is far enough away from the street that you could get a 22 or a 24-foot motorhome in there and still stay off the right-of-way, the sidewalk, would this not allow you to put a longer vehicle in there as long as it was per our ordinance being off the right-of-way?
The way the code is before you this evening, it would not allow those vehicles over 20 or 18 feet long to be in the front yard. They'd have to be either in the side yard or the rear yard. Mm-hmm. So in your example, that would not be allowed in the front yard, even though it would be off the right-of-way.
In relation to Ken's comment about, I had a 32-foot fifth wheel, and I could park it in my driveway and not have it stick out back, it was about 3 feet back from the curb. So, and it was about 2 feet away from the wall. So we're talking like 35 feet from the curb to the house. If I pave that whole front yard, you wouldn't jerk out the trees and the shrubbery and pave the whole front yard, I could put a parking lot in there, you know, pull right in, and then back out and get out. So it'd be almost a commercial parking lot. If it's that size, if you can pave the whole front yard.
Of course, if you were charging for that, it would be a commercial parking lot and would not be allowed in the residential zone.
I think the point he's making, he could pave his whole front yard and park that 35-foot fifth wheel in front of his house, crossways in front of his house.
Well, the 35-foot fifth wheel in this code would not be allowed because of its length, regardless of how you parked it.
But I parked it on the side yard, most
side
of the
yard
all the time, except when I was getting ready to sell it, and I put it out on the front. But it's just the idea that if you have a yard that's big as mine, you can pave the whole thing and still pull up the curb cut and then park in front of your car right up to the house and back out and go back out the same way. And my next door neighbor's got a curb cut, so maybe we just make it, you know, angle parking and one way through.
Well, there are, you know, some cities do have codes that require a certain amount of landscaping and a certain limitation on impervious surfaces on your lot, sometimes 35%, sometimes 50%. But Othello Code does not have that. So theoretically now, anyone could pave their entire yard if they chose to do that because there's no restriction in the code. There's no requirement for any landscaping, and there's no limitation as to the amount of impervious surface that you can put. So if you chose to do that, you certainly could under today's code.
I can think of one place in town that is paved, I think.
Mm-hmm. Very possible.
Yeah. All right.
Go ahead.
Shane Rose with Hill Independent. Some of the new curbing styles might be jimmied with here. I know in some of the new areas of town, the curb is pretty much the same all around. It's just that kind of that roll. There is, like where I live, there is no curb cut. The curb is the same in the entire neighborhood, and you can go over any of it at any time. It's all built the same, so there's no definite area other than where your actual driveway
is past. It's a little roll.
Yeah, it's just that little roll, so I just wanted to point that out. Some of the newer construction doesn't do just curb cuts anymore.
We have one street in town that we've tried that on. That was Sagestone. Mm-hmm. In the new Sagestone addition, but on Sagestone Street, we went to the roll.
So would that, does that constitute curb cut, the rolled?
It's used as a curb cut, especially where the driveway is. But the council has prohibited installation of rolled curbs. They're no longer allowed.
Hmm. Okay.
Maybe we need to attack this the other way, is if we give them from house to street 30 feet wide, and let them park whatever they want on there as long as they're 5 feet back from the curb. Daryl, has any town approached it that way?
Yeah, In my experience, most towns that have placed restrictions on residential parking have been very restrictive. They've been very narrow in terms of the size of the driveway. They've been very restricted in terms of the types of vehicles. No RVs at all are typical restrictions. No trailers of boat trailers or snowmobile trailers in the front yard. Limited parking in the rear yard, and side yards limited to RVs of a certain length. So when most municipalities tackle parking, they usually jump in all the way because it's substantially easier to enforce, the expectations are clear, and there's no gray area as to what is allowed or what isn't allowed. And I think where we run into problems with enforcement is when we have situations where it can be interpreted a number of different ways, and you know, what's 18 feet? Does that include the tongue? It's just a matter of not being terribly precise, and so you have a situation like you have now where a lot of enforcement isn't accomplished because it's very difficult to enforce. I still believe with our new method of enforcement, we'll have more opportunity to talk directly with property owners to work out issues and to come to some satisfactory solutions. And we do have some restrictions to front yard parking in our code today, as was pointed out. And then there's also the side obscuring requirement in the rear yard. So our code today actually has some pretty stringent requirements if they're enforced. And I think our new method of enforcement will give us a better opportunity to do that.
Mark suggested you can park this 18-foot length. If you have enough room to park a longer RV, then you're still off the, not into the sidewalk area, and you're compliant that way. I think that would be good. This is a watered-down version, like you say. I think most communities either dive in and it's very strict and to the point and easy to enforce. This would still, like it is tonight with a couple of the changes that we've talked about, would still enable us to clean up some of the pictures that you had here, would better enable code enforcement to go in and say you're not in compliance, because I think, you know, their curb cut is only 12 feet, and yet they're parking for 120 feet across the front of their lot. It's watered down. I guess I don't particularly care for it, but it would still better enable us to enforce some of the abuses that are going on right now that we are concerned with. And there's a dozen of them or so in town that, and you're not one of them.
And Mayor, I would very much agree, particularly if we had a limitation on the front yard to a 30-foot wide area where parking could occur, because as you say, as it's written now, you could park in the entire front yard. And I'm not sure that's addressing any of the issues that we showed on those front yard photographs. But with some limitation on the front yard, 30 feet wide, providing access to one side yard, I think those are the kinds of things that could be effective yet still provide for some opportunity for people to park in their front yards in a reasonable way. If we didn't limit the types of vehicles, so if you could fit your RV in your area, that would be allowed. But simply providing some limitation as to the space, that could go a long ways in our ability to be able to provide some enforcement for those situations that we saw in the photographs that you've seen in past meetings.
So if we do nothing now, then it's allowed. You can park as many cars as you want on your front lawn as long as you go into your driveway without being improved.
That's correct. Under this ordinance as it's before you.
So if we don't have an ordinance or pass some kind of ordinance that restricts that, then we're just back to
where we're at. Yeah.
Where we're at, and there's nothing to enforce because they can park there.
The other thing with we talk about the space and we say you can come to within 5 feet of the curb. And I think we had the same discussion with RVs. Is your neighbor parks within 5 feet of the curb with their RV and you got a driveway next to them? And it's what Tim brought up last week. You come out of your driveway, you don't have a clue. So that's why I think they can park their RV within 5 feet of the curb, you know, backing it in up to their garage. And I don't necessarily wasn't in favor of that. I was more the 13 feet, the actual city easement.
What is the ordinance on parking from the curb? Is it 5 feet now?
Well, there is no specific restriction currently.
With RV parking?
I don't believe that. I believe the
code silent. Dale Wyman here a few years ago kind of did, and as long as it was not a safety issue, but I didn't know whether it's 5 feet or 13 feet or.
We had a lot. I don't remember. We need to try to find it, but we did have a lot of discussion on that for several weeks about RV parking in because the problem was is some of them were starting to approach against the where pedestrians would walk. And I thought we had that resolved.
Well, one of the things to keep in mind is that parking should occur on someone's property and not in the city right-of-way. So the only time parking's allowed under code in the city right-of-way is where there's designated parking on the street. That area between the curb and the person's property line is still the city's property. Wherever that is, whether it's 5 feet from the curb or 13 feet from the curb. Now, I think one of the difficulties we have sometimes in enforcement here is that there's been this notion that every property line is always 13 feet from the curb. That simply is not true. Property lines and the location of the street within the right-of-way vary. And the only true way to determine where somebody's property ends is to have the property line identified, and that can only be done through a survey. So the idea would be to keep people parking on their property within the designated area that's allowed. And when you start encroaching onto the city right-of-way, whether or not it's onto the street or onto the sidewalk, it's still on city property. And if something were to happen, somebody were walking along, even the lawn area, what somebody thinks is their property, but it's really city right-of-way, and they trip and as a result of something parked there, or they fall or get hurt on a tongue of a trailer, that potentially is a city liability because it's happening on your property. And so I think the idea of the restriction ought to be parking on your own property within a designated area rather than trying to determine some length from curb, because you really don't know where that property line begins just because of where the curb's placed. It isn't always placed in the exact location that you think it is. Streets meander sometimes through the right-of-way. So that's really the only true test is to have in your code something that says parking shall only occur on private property, and if you want to place a restriction that it can only park within a 30-foot wide swath, you know, so be it. But when you start allowing in your code overhangs in the city right-of-way, I think you begin to create some liability issues for the city.
And I don't think that's the case. I wouldn't think that.
I don't believe it's addressed that way.
I don't think that we would allow them to encroach into the sidewalk area. And
the code is not written that way currently, but somewhere along the line there's become this notion that it's okay to do that if you're 13 feet from the curb, and it may not be. That 13 feet may be correct in some locations, but in other locations it may be only 5 feet from the curb, and in other locations it may be 20. It just depends on how the streets are laid out and where that actual real property line is, because that is a tangible line that can be determined through survey. And that is a person's property ownership, and it ends there, and the city's ownership begins at that point.
Yeah, I'm thinking it was a corner lot with the RVs, and the fence was 13 feet back from the curb, and the RV was 8 foot wide, and that left 5 foot for the sidewalk, and it was all okay, was the impression of everybody. And I'm not sure if for a lot in the middle of the block what they decided on how far it could come out.
What we're saying now, though, with the corner lot, that both the flanking street and the front are front yards, so therefore that doesn't apply. And that's where we have somewhat of a problem, because that 13 feet was considered okay on a corner lot, but we can't go back and change that now that it's already done in those particular corner lots. It's already done. We could build on new property, but I know at one time we said, yeah, that's okay to do that, but now we're saying that both the streets are front streets or front yards, and that creates another problem indirectly.
It's a big problem, and that I would be in favor of legislaturing out, because like the audience member admitted, I'm a violator of that, and it would be horrendous that I would lose my whole side yard is not a fenced area for a play area and area for the family. So.
Well, and then with people with corner lots, if they did have a motorhome, according to this, they would not be able to consider that side yard with the side of their house if it's facing this way.
Right, yeah.
And fence it and put their motorhome in on the side. I would prohibit that too. So.
Yeah, you could drive down 13th Street, 903 up.
Yeah, and then that is an issue.
And those three people were here 6-7 years ago when we were going through the RV ordinances to make sure with those when we were going through those changes on the RVs. Mm-hmm.
Well. Moving right along here.
We beat it to death enough.
Would the council like to see this on our agenda of our next meeting to address front yards, 30-foot curb cuts?
And not curb cuts.
30-foot.
Because Mark's only got
30
a
20-foot parking, 30-foot.
But he can pull in his driveway. And
it's
go
30.
Over
if you have a, what is it limiting to? 30 feet. 30 feet in your front yard.
30-foot wide area of parking in your front yard, and then worded so that it would allow access to a one side yard, so that you could have your driveway at 30 feet, and then access off of that to a side yard. And I think
so. You'd have to have a 30-foot. Curb cut to get into that, or you could have a smaller curb cut and
then drive over.
Okay.
I think you'd have to provide for that. And then have it done in such a way that it would have to be the closest side yard, so you couldn't drive all the way across the front of your yard to the side.
To get to the other side
of
the house.
Yeah, so it would be the closest side yard and a 30-foot main driveway area.
I'm
hearing from the council.
These new houses in R2 or R3 zoning, they're building 10 feet apart. If your driveway's on that side, there's not a whole lot of opportunity to pull into your backyard or use that to get to your backyard or
there,
side yard or get to your backyard.
There may very well be situations where you cannot park vehicles in your rear yard. If you don't have an alley access, if you have only a 5-foot side yard, you just can't get a vehicle back there. And I suppose that's one of the situations when you purchase a house that you look at that as a, you know, what are your needs and where are you going to park your vehicles and here's your area. And if that doesn't meet your needs, then you look for a house that meets your needs, or you rent storage for some of your vehicles and your trailers. And unfortunately, as lots get smaller and smaller in urban settings simply because of the value of the land, there's going to be less and less opportunity for the kind of parking for large RVs and multiple trailers within those smaller city lots.
That's where you put two garage doors in a garage and drive right through.
If you have a 400 square foot garage, why can't you have 10 feet wide and 40 feet long? You know, you go right on through and out the alley if you've got an alley. But so there has to be some creativity, I think, when you run into these 5-foot side yards. I live in Seattle. I had one driveway for two houses. And when you bought the house, there was an easement for the driveway that went down between the two houses. And when you got down to the end, there was a two-car garage there. And you got, the one guy got one, the other one got the other one, and the wall ran right down the property line. So it's a possibility to do, but you have to get creative, and it has to be thought out ahead of time. If you're going to use 5 foot yards, then we've gotten to the point where you get 5 feet on each side and that's it. Mine happens to be, I think it's 8 on one side and 5 on the other. But even at that, you can't get an 8 foot wide RV in there because the overhang on your house sticks out 2 feet, so you're limited to 6 feet. You can't get any closer than that. So, I don't know. We've opened a Pandora's box. And the only way, I guess, to close it is to do like Daryl said, just jump in with both feet maybe and just make total restriction and let it go with that. I'm not for that. But some people have done it. And that's just, you know, you have to come be a little creative about what you're going to do. But I agree with the 30 feet and in access to a site area.
Rand, you got something you'd like to say?
Yeah, while we're being creative, maybe we can address the actual problem. Somebody said there were maybe a dozen people in town that are the actual problem. Maybe we ought to look at it from that standpoint. So
it's messy right now. It's messy right now because we have problems enforcing our critical problems in town right now because of the way the codes are. We're restricting this to front yard and front yard only. Not doing anything with side yard or backyard. We can enforce those. We have codes that can enforce those already. We are going to do that, but I think what council was trying to do here was come up with a way to make code enforcement in the front yard areas easier, and because right now it's not easy. Let's just go out and enforce it, but the way the codes are written right now, it's not that easy, and we're trying to make it easier. Could.
Other than covering everybody in town,
No. We have to make it the same rule for everybody.
That'd be universal.
You can't specifically pick on people, or you're going against the right citizen.
Well, in essence, that's what you're doing, though, because not everybody's driveway is the same length. And, you know, there's just all kinds of conditions, so you're kind of picking and choosing. Mark doesn't want to infringe on his side front yard, and you don't want to
So that's why we're just talking about front yards right now. Daryl, on the 18 foot by 8 feet, that can I keep going back to that. What if you can fit a 22 footer there on there and still be off of the right of way and up on your own property?
Well, this code would not allow that because 18 is the maximum length. But I'm not sure there's any particular magic to 18 feet. So if you think 22 would be better, or if you simply could say any size that fits within your property boundary, that would be fine too. But this gives a starting point for the discussion. So I don't think there's any particular.
I think that was good. I think the last any size that fits within your property boundary, it mm-hmm. would be good language there.
Okay.
Your property value, not the easement. Yeah, on your own property.
In some areas, Shannon, that doesn't even leave you enough room to park a car. By the time you take 13 feet from the curb towards the house, and you that remaining distance, I think there's some situations where you don't even have 15, 16 feet there. Yeah, I may be mistaken, but I know my place, I don't think I could park my truck beyond 13 feet of city
easement. I think, aren't we talking about recreational vehicles, the larger vehicles? Because I know.
That's the discussion, and clearly people park their cars sometimes back out as far as to the street. But in theory, vehicle parking should take place on property. And in theory, when you're accessing a front yard, the building's set back a minimum of 25 feet. So there should always be at least 25 feet between your structure and your property line that allows for the space for parking of vehicles. Now, in practicality, there's been times when, particularly on corner lots, where houses have inched their way closer to the roadway, and now people are parking on that side, and you do potentially have 10 or 15 feet available, and those vehicles are going to be in the right of way. But I think the main focus has been the larger RVs, because they block sight, they have a tongue that sticks out that tends to create a hazard, especially in the dark when it can't be seen. So I think some restriction of RVs parking within that right of way is probably realistic. Trying to keep all cars out of that right of way probably is not.
Mm-hmm. Would council like to modify that language? Whatever length, as long as it was on your property, in the front yard or front yard only, at our next meeting. I'd like to see it.
No more than 30 foot wide.
Yeah. Parallels. And the side yard can be parallel and to your front yard and
30 feet.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a problem with the length as long as it encroaches upon that. We need to say 5 feet back from the curb, no closer. I don't know. Give them something to go off of, but I don't know.
I think
that's the sidewalk, isn't it?
I'd like to see what it is now. I think there is a setback now. I think when we covered this before, I don't think that they were allowed to pull and encroach and take up the sidewalk area.
No, they weren't.
Yeah, but is 5 feet enough back from the curb? And I mean, again, that's a tough one, because if I have visitors and park two cars in my driveway, I am within the 5 and 13 feet from the curb. If an RV is parked there for 8 months of the year and is 5 feet from the curb and a neighboring driveway, that's a real hazard for that poor neighbor to back out of there and try to see around it. So
we had that happen in our neighborhood here about 12 years ago. It was a corner lot. They had one that stuck clear out into the street, and there was a child hit on a bicycle right there. And it was the driver couldn't see the child, and we'd come around the corner. And so it can happen.
Maybe you want to throw out like 10 feet from the curb. And again, I realize the property lines vary, but there needs to be some clearance there for your neighbor's driveway.
Damon, did you find the corner?
I just wanted to clarify a couple points, and this is in 1761, use of right-of-way, and Mark, this goes to some of your questions. It says, vehicles parked behind the curb such that all or part of the vehicle extends over the public right-of-way shall be parked, A, no closer than 6 feet from the curb face. We've been talking 5, this says 6. Not encroach on the public sidewalk. Can't extend over the sidewalk. Be at least 15 feet from all alley rights of way. Okay, 15 feet back. Be at least 30 feet from the projection of street curbs on corner lots. This is a corner lot, Ken, that you and I talked about. 30 feet back in the corner with a line, the hypotenuse of a triangle. That's the 30 feet. And E, on a surface improved with gravel.
That's what it says now.
So it says now.
All vehicles?
Vehicles parked behind the curb such that all or part of the vehicle extends over the public right-of-way shall be parked on a surface improved with gravel.
That's the way our ordinance reads now.
That's what it says right now.
All vehicles, not just RVs or boats. Or
all vehicles.
What was it? It was six, the number they arrived on was 6 feet from the curb.
Yes.
we might have it covered right there.
Except we don't have the width, right?
I'm sorry?
30-foot width, we don't have that covered, right?
No, there's no width out here, or length.
Because that's the big thing that got us onto this, is all the cars parked everywhere, going over the curbs and the front yards,
right.
Parked all directions. So, trying to help control that a little bit.
Give us one more massage and come back. There are two stories. One is too watered down. We need to make it more stricter. And another one is kind of leave it as it is, tweak it a little bit. So if we brought you option A and B for consideration next week, then the council decides which way you want to go.
You okay with that?
Yeah. I got one question on this, what we've come up with here now. Going back to our corner lots here and whatnot, we're talking about that 13 feet that we've got some already existing, and we've got RVs parked in that strip. So if you figure the 13 feet minus the 8 feet, we're only 5 feet from the curb, so we're going to go back and kick those people out when we've already made agreements with them back 6-7 years ago. I'm asking a dumb question here, but
you can't do that.
But it's in that code there. Evidently, we had a 6-foot dimension there,
right?
And which you could not have done that. You'd have to have 14 feet or 15 feet to make it.
And I think what you need to do is we need to establish a starting point.
Right.
And those people that are in that category. They certainly can't be expected to go and tear everything down and rebuild there.
We could put language in there that covers that if that's what the council wants. But this was adopted in 06.
And how far back from the curb again? 6 or 10?
6 feet.
6 feet from the curb face.
So we would be saying it would improve surface 30 feet wide from your house to the street, 6 feet back from the curb, you put whatever you want in there as long as you're in that area, and it's an improved surface.
If you add the 30-foot discussion.
Yeah, if we added this, that.
Yeah.
That would be my intent right there.
Okay.
So house to 6 feet from the curb, 30 feet wide, improved surface, whatever you can fit in there is fine.
And you can use that curb cut to get to your side
right.
yard and park right. additional. Parking in
sure.
there. Okay, why don't you do that, Daryl? Come up with a plan A, like Mark just described, and a plan B, maybe like Ken is in support of, maybe a more watered down version.
That we can do.
Ken? Okay. I'd like to thank both of you for coming here tonight, and we appreciate your input, all three of you. You didn't say much, but. Item number 2, sewer utility rate review.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of council. We're in the final year of, I think it's been a 4-year rate increase for the sewer utility, and we're considering a rate increase over the next 3 years. We're proposing a $2 increase to the base sewer rate each year from 2010 to 2012. The increase would facilitate the buildup of reserves for future Department of Ecology required sewer treatment improvements. This increase would facilitate regular upkeep of the existing collection system and treatment plant with small to moderate capital replacement repair projects, as well as build reserves for future capital improvements. These projects include lagoon lining, bench road sewer extension, infiltration and inflow study, and any Department of Ecology, DOE required improvements. Staff also recommends a 4-cent increase per year to the rates for the number of students, employees, and the commercial water usage rate. And then the table here summarizes the increases. It shows the current rates in the left-hand column and how the changes would be reflected going across from year to year. City Administrator Eamon Sheldon included a memorandum, and then on the back of that memorandum, it shows rates statewide and where Othello falls in that. We're what, about number four coming down from the top, and the average for this list is $31.72, and Othello's at $19.68. And then the ordinance, the shaded area of the ordinance is the outside city rates. The non-shaded areas are for the inside city rates. And the rate structure does not change at all. The previous 4 years, we used exactly this same formula for rate increases. So it carries on what has taken place over the last 4 years. Are there any questions?
Basically, why we're doing this is at some point in time, the city is going to be forced by the Department of Ecology to go to a very expensive system compared to the system we have now. And we have to show the state that we are in good faith saving money for that time.
That's correct.
And I think where are we at in our reserve at the present?
At the end of this year, in the 2010 budget, we show an ending fund balance in the sewer reserve fund of about, I think it's $2,024,000, something around in that. But it's over $2 million.
But that's still, if they were to tell us tomorrow that we're going to need to go to that system, you know, by 2011, that wouldn't go very far.
No.
And what we're trying to do is get some matching funds and some state funds, and we need to show that we are in good faith. We, you know, we couldn't be the cheapest in the state. We're the fourth cheapest in the state. And by raising our rates and still staying reasonable, we are going to show the Department of Ecology that we are working toward that change whenever it may come.
Yes, that's correct.
And will better enable us to get fund out, you know, matching funds from somebody.
Yes.
Where do those matching funds come from? Some of these cities that have had to do that already.
Well, mainly this was as it would be DOE driven. They will supply funding only if you can show good faith. Number one, that you can repay if it's loan, some of it's grant, and number two, that you have been charging enough to establish reserves to help build a new facility if that's what they're requiring. So DOE is a fund, Community Development Block Grant is another fund. But these all look at what has the city been doing to put monies aside in their own coffers to help build whatever the requirement from DOE is going to be. So there's a number of sources.
I was under the understanding that they were looking more at treating our water as it comes out of the third lagoon rather than lining the lagoons. Am I incorrect or?
No, that is a possibility. Again, a good reason to have this reserve money in place. The ammonia is another issue. Jay and Gray and Osborne have been working with DOE on resolving our ammonia issue, and we think we have a good plan in place that DOE is going to buy now. So we may not, the DOE may not come down as hard on the city relative to future requirements as they could have. They're currently reviewing our plan that you reviewed and we submitted to DOE to take care of the ammonia issue. But you're right, part of our issue is what is the quality of water that we are discharging? That's always monitored.
Because I am all set to fight on that lining. I mean, that was lined with diatomaceous earth and it's you know, hasn't been touched in 20, well, I think it was 86 they did it, and that's just got to be like a solid as a rock down there at the bottom of those ponds.
We have no requirement to line the ponds right now.
But do you know, I just read in the paper where they were having a tour of what Warden did for their wastewater treatment. Were they forced to treat their water, or are you familiar what happened there?
Yes. Well, first of all, they had in place a moratorium on building. There could be no new construction in the city of Warden because the sewer treatment plant didn't have the capacity. So DOE forced that issue. Then the state helped them with funding. They went out and got several grants, a couple loans. They had help from the governor's office, and they were able to build a new facility. So the moratorium no longer exists. But the city's, the Warden city's sewer rates, well, I don't know if it's on here or not, but is...
I didn't see it.
I don't see it on this list. It is fairly high because of the debt the citizens have to pay off.
Is our three-pond system fairly unique?
It didn't used to be. It is now. We have an anaerobic system, which means that the bugs that we keep alive digest everything, which results in the product that we put in the stream. The new mechanical systems, which is the best available science, which is what DOE always pushes, but I think we're starting to win the battle to keep our anaerobic system, as long as we've dealt with the ammonia issue that's been plaguing the city for a long time. So we may have a short reprieve, 5 or 6 years through this permit process, that we may not have to build a new facility. But we still need to have the reserves and have our rate structure in place.
Eventually, at some point in time, we're going to need to do that. But we can push it down the road as far as we can.
Absolutely. We have said all along, we'll fight the battle, and we've been doing that.
What kind of capacity are we running through there now?
I'm sorry?
What kind of capacity? Are we about 60% running through there? We can handle 40% more? Or
do you know a percent, Jay? I don't know off the top of my head.
That depends on where we're at. We're working on a plan for maintaining adequate capacity right now. And by the formula that Ecology is using, we are... not an answer all. We can add 50%. There are certain things that have to happen in order to maintain that. And that can go all out.
Mike, I think you can sit down.
Oh,
yeah. All them questions are kind of going around you there. They're all technical questions. Okay. I can see you've been standing
job,
there a long
Mike.
Time.
We understand the numbers.
Actually, to Mike's credit, he did put this chart together and do the averages and stuff. I didn't do that. Mike did.
Thank you, Mike. Staff recommends placing this on the consent agenda for our November 9th meeting.
Now, there is one more step. I'm sorry, Ken.
I was going to say, if we're going to vote on an increase in utilities, I really don't want to see it on the consent agenda. I'd rather see it come up to a vote of it individually of the council members myself, instead of it being on the consent.
Me too, because I'm going to vote no.
We can certainly do that.
If we already have $2 million, I don't see why we need to raise it to that level.
There is one more.
It takes $10 million to put in the new facility. That's why.
There is one more step, and that's working with Water District Number 1 on their water rates. We have to have a joint meeting with them, which we'll do December 14th. They've been notified. We have to give them 30 days notification. That's all been done, and the meeting is scheduled for December 14th. So they'll adopt that.
Let's just put it on the agenda then as an agenda item.
Okay.
Where do we come up with $2 a year instead of like $1 a year, $1.50 or?
You want District Number 1 done?
No. Why are we going?
On the formula.
Why did we decide $2 a year instead of $1 a year?
That's just consistent with our past 4 year increase. And it could be $1.87 or $2.04 or something. It's just consistent with what the council has done in the past.
Okay. Looks like 6% a year.
Is there any way of projecting that out to see what our reserves might be at the end of 2013, or is this goes to 12?
Yeah.
Okay. Item number three, preliminary budget discussions. General fund, Mike?
Hi. Did you take a water break? I'm done. $300,000 going into the street fund for those projects. It goes on, and then is the water fund, the sewer fund, and the solid waste fund all have reserves at the end of the year. So just to give you a feel for that.
So Mike, according to your projected ending balance, we're fine on our. We have in place a low limit we're willing to go as far as the council. We're doing fine on all that in the funds.
Yeah,
Right, and yeah, the general fund actually, the council approved a low of $500,000 in this fund. And some of the others, I can't remember the number of the street fund. It seems like it seemed to be around $75,000. These down here in the utility funds, $200,000 is the minimum in water, $75,000 in sewer, and I'm not even sure what solid waste is, but this is quite a bit more than solid waste requires. I'd have to look to see what that is, but I know it's a lot more than 91,000.
Okay. Would you scroll down on that again? Where did we see the sewer was 2 million?
Oh, this is up here. This is the, right here. This is a sewer reserve fund.
Okay.
Fund 108. This is it right here.
So we've got reserve funds and then just regular, the regular funds in this chart, the fund balance in this chart.
That's right. So I'll jump over now into the general fund, and what I've done is I've created a window here. And right down here is the math for the fund. And just to show you that we have a balanced budget, I'm going to go into this little block right here, which is expenditure. And I'm going to subtract all of the capital, okay, which is the capital is right down here, $513,250, okay? So I'll take 513,250, and I'll subtract that. So you see that we have a balanced budget. We have more revenue coming in than we have expenditures going out. And this is pure operations. So this is looking at the difference between one-time expenditures, which are capital, and ongoing expenditures, which are operations. So in this case, we have a very healthy beginning fund balance. This is our estimate. And then here's our revenues, and here's our expenditures. And this is without any capital. So I'll put the capital back in. Okay. So with $513,250 in capital, our expenditures exceed our revenues by almost $279,000. So as we go through this upper portion up here, if you want to make any changes, we can see the results of those changes down in this part of the spreadsheet. So I'll start down here.
Mike, yes. Question for you. Your revenue estimates include half the utility fund, correct?
That's correct.
And so what if, can you put some of these capitals to the utility fund and want to make this number look better? Is it?
Sorry, now, if we could do what now?
The capital numbers, like some of the capital projects, if we took those out of the utility fund, the half the utility fund that's left, that would increase this number, correct?
Yes, okay. Yes, it would.
Do you have any capitals coming out of the utility fund at this point?
Very little. I included that in the, it's in the packet right here, in fact, I'll just get
Well, I assume you're going to get to the utility fund, so
yeah.
We'll just look there, okay.
Yeah, I think right now all we have coming out of there is $300,000 going into the street fund because we were actually looking at an overlay budget, but that might change after we do the street fund next week. But I think we got $300,000 coming out into the street fund and $75,000 going into the general fund. That's all right now that has been assigned.
Another question, Mike. We're $270,957 short. Now we have a minimum fund balance of $500,000 on top of that?
No.
All
this number is saying right here is it's a difference between revenue and expenditures. That's all this number is telling us right here, is that expenditures are exceeding revenue. Here's our fund balance right here. $1,379,441. And I think it would be important to say that this capital is not being funded from anywhere else. It's actually being taken out of fund balance and st-
still leaves.
That's the number you're trying to make look better. The one, yeah.
So I think that's important. All I'm showing here is that expenditures exceed revenue by this much.
If we need to.
So we have, actually, I'm kind of excited about doing the next report because revenue is kind of knocking my socks off, and it's just been kind of a very interesting year. So in this first section under legislative, I can't do it. So this is what I keep this in mind. This is the 2008, this is 2009, this is 2010. So we'll be comparing these two columns right here. And I can't freeze this because I've already done a window here, and it won't accept another window. So this is 2009 and this is 2010. And basically the difference in right is $3,000 for election costs. It is not a 3-10 2010. There's no change in the county prosecutor here. The administrative budget goes from 122 to 182. We moved the admin secretary and her benefits in here from records. So she's no longer in the records portion, which we'll see later because that budget will be going down because of that. So that's the difference. That's what jumped this up. Plus, this is civil service testing, it's gone down. The professional services has gone down $1,000. That's pretty much what's driving that right now. Now, the most important position in the whole city is finance.
Payroll.
Now, I do want to point some significant change, though. The accounts payable person is going from 33 to almost 41, so that rings a bell right off the bat. She is currently a 35-hour-a-week employee, and we're moving her to a 40-hour-a-week. And that alone, I think, is around $5,000 a year difference. So that plus a salary increase, our CPI increase, benefits are affected somewhat by that increase. It isn't a straight across 5% increase in benefits when salaries are increasing. There are only some items in the benefits that are go up, like for instance, retirement and some things like that are affected by the salary increase, but not all the benefits. So it isn't a straight across 5% difference.
Was the committee that looked at this portion of the budget okay with going from the 35-hour to 40-hour week?
We didn't have any comment about it.
We never did receive any comment.
Okay. And what's your what percent are you using for salary increases?
5%. And what we thought we'd do is discuss that when we get through this admin portion of the budget, and then we talk about salaries and increases. So the total here is about $11,000 increase in the finance budget. In record services, as you can see, this salary, the admin secretary salary has been taken out, and her benefits been taken out right here. So those two have been moved up. And the admin budget was 270-170 in 2009, it's 232-416 for 2000. The facilities budget has gone up. It's just a bit under $9,000. A portion of that and is the janitorial. We increased, was it 5%? It was a 5% increase. Now, that doesn't mean that this number is 5% larger than this number, because this number also includes extra time that she puts in for doing carpet cleaning and some other things. So this isn't an exact 5% increase over this number. It's just her
her monthly fee for cleaning, I believe, was around $1,800, and that has been increased by 5%. And so that would be reflected. City Hall electricity, we budgeted more because it's been higher, and natural gas has also gone up. This line item right here for building and repairs, and I appreciated Debbie pointing this out. Every year it runs around $9,000, and every year we budget $4,000. And we thought, you know, if it's running $9,000, why don't we budget for it, you know, instead of playing that game. So that's a definite increase over the previous year. And so that's what the impact on this difference right here.
So does that, I think it was last year, and I think I heard rumors this year, does that include painting our building that needs to be painted, parts of it?
Well, that's minor repairs. Our building is 13 years old now, and every year, as you know, there's more and more repairs to do. That does not include the painting that you mentioned to me. That would be an addition, and I don't have a cost estimate for you. We can get that, though.
Because we can't just let it keep deteriorating, just keep pushing on. Eventually, it's going to really get expensive.
Right.
So,
yeah, you need to take care of it as you go, or pretty soon it's a huge project.
So I guess I'd like us to consider whatever the paint bill is to fix that. I don't know.
This building?
Yes. It's been 13 years, and the paint's cracking and stuff like that. And the worse that gets, the more trouble we're going to have.
Yeah, you could really notice it on the front of the building, especially where the water has come down in some of the corners. It's really deteriorated quite a bit.
And then here we have risk management. Our insurance from last year went up about quite $12,000, and I have to apologize to council. Eamon asked me like 3 or 4 different times to bring a list of some of the insurance recoveries and stuff we got during the year. In my head, I have a picture of some of them. One of them, the most significant, was over $27,000 in insurance recoveries for a well. Mm-hmm. And then there were some smaller ones too, and I don't remember, Jay, if you remember any of those. There were some
floods and the water going into people's houses from snow runoff, as well as sewer backing up. And I think if you look at the well, the covering that submergible pump was just kind of frosting on the cake, because our last carrier would not have done that, and that's another story.
The chief gets reimbursed every year from our insurance company for the training that he puts on. That's $4,500.
Shoot, Mark, my insurance for my farm is like $42,000 a year.
The next section is,
and I'm a small farmer.
City attorney, legal. We have been budgeting, well, I've been here for 3 years and probably seen four budgets, and it's always been $45,000, and his annual, the year end, it never reaches $45,000, and it isn't anticipated to do that this year. In fact, this year, it looks like it's going to be well under that amount, so that's cold and open steady.
So we're charged by the hour on that one. Is that how that works? Mm-hmm.
The first 11 hours is $1,970, and then after that, it's $140 an hour for every hour.
Your numbers over in the gray on the right are bothering me. What are those?
Oh, those are for me.
Okay.
What I do is I put the net change in there so I can, if somebody were to ask me, well, why did this change, or what was this all about, or this, and then I can spot it quickly. But
I you realize it's highly inaccurate, right?
Well, it's probably, I have some hidden things in here, and those numbers are probably involved in those hidden columns. I didn't want to put columns in there for what we could spend it to date column and what we expect to get at the end of the year, because that isn't really part of our discussion, and it get very kind of nerve-wracking seeing all the numbers. So I think in between here there's some hidden columns.
Mm.
And so this is information systems technology, money
I don't think from 42 to 52 is 5%.
It's actually not, and I have a justification sheet for that. We did start staying extremely low. We have eliminated a number of contracts that he now takes over that job. They're listed on this sheet, as well as the other things that he does for us. In addition, cities our size, the average wage for an IT person is just over $55,000, and we're asking to bring him up to 52, which includes 5%. So he has about $16,000 there of contracts that we no longer have to do because we have Stan on board.
And when I'll say this year, when I shake my head yes, that means I understand the numbers, not that I agree with them. To say that every year.
And this is a miscellaneous section under the general government, and it's pretty much in line with last year, even though we added the Columbia Basin Development League contribution of $6,000 and our membership of $300. We also added $1,000 for our tourism radio station. It needs some maintenance and repair. So we put $1,000 in there for our tourism radio station. And we're still about pretty much even with last year. Community services has gone down. The Literacy Council kind of went defunct. And we actually got, they sent us back, they refunded us money that they had that belonged to us this past year. So the total administration before we get to capital is $1,116,000 this year. It was $1,067,000 last year. This is just non expenditures. We collect tax on taxable sales, and then we have to send it into the state, and that's what that line item is. And then the capital expenditures, we have, the only thing we have in here this year is $6,000 for computer upgrades. This is our annual replacement schedule, and of course compared to last year, this is quite a significant drop because of the software that's no longer in there.
Yeah, $110,000 last year.
Software, yeah.
So the grand total for the administration is $1,124,000. Last year it was $1,181,000. Of course, the most significant drop was this $100,000 in capital, which is, of course, wasn't repeated this year. So,
at this point, Councilmember Spohr brought up the collective bargaining agreement percentage increases for 2010. And we wanted to stop here and let everybody know what's happened to that. First of all, we have three collective bargaining agreements with the Teamsters and the Police Department. And all three of those agreements have a 5%, basically a COLA, increase for 2010. Again, those are set in contract that the council has agreed with. All three of those agreements are up at the end of next year. So in 2010, we'll be negotiating the next three-year cycle with the Teamsters. The fourth union agreement that we have is with the operating engineers that the Public Works Department belongs to. They had a range negotiated for 2010 that was between 3% as a minimum and 5% as a maximum. Now, as you know, that's all predicated on the COLA. The COLA was it August or September? One of those two was minus 1.9. So it falls well below the minimum for the public works operating engineers. Therefore, by contract, we have to give them 3%. That's all of the union members. Aside from those, there are 16 other non-union employees in the city that do not have a contract. Typically and traditionally in the past, percentages given to the union are a little bit closer. There's 2% difference this year. But typically, the non-union employees have been given whatever the higher rate is traditionally in the past for the city. So the salary increases for non-union employees across the board is 5%, as shown here. Again, all the dispatchers, sergeants, and officers are all at 5%. Non-union is 5%, and the public works are at 3% because that's what the contract says. So that's what's reflected in this budget.
Well, it's always awkward for all my years in the business world, budgets for salaries are discussed in private. Obviously, we can't do that here. But I'll just be blunt. Anything over 3% for non-union employees, I'll just vote no on the budget. I don't, in this economy, I think that's more than adequate. And as we're negotiating a bunch of contracts next year, I don't want to set a precedent that in this economy that 5% is an acceptable level.
You know, earlier I heard discussion how when we create ordinances, we have to create them to be fair and equal to all the citizens. I think we need to be the same way if they're our employees. I don't think we need to penalize our employees because they do not belong to a union. I think we need to keep it at an equal level with all of them that we're going. I have no problem with the 5%.
Go ahead, Ken.
Back when we was negotiating some of these union contracts, you say 5% was too high. Back at the time we were negotiating, we were darn lucky we got it at 5%. They were talking about 8 and 10%, and that's the way inflation was going, and that's the way everybody's train of thought was. We had to work like heck to get those to 3% and 5%. I sit on that board, and I know what we went through to make it work. And we had some real hassles over that, trying to keep those down at that level. Now, sure, it looks bad, but at that time, it was a heck of a good deal. And we just have to live with it.
What we have tried to do when you talk about union employees versus non-union employees, we're a team here, and to make everybody feel that they're part of the team, we don't like. Ken elaborated on, we don't want to leave one part out and raise the standard for the others. So we have in the past tended to give non-union employees the same increases that the union counterparts are getting here in the city. And yeah, the public works, that was, you know, it's negotiated, you know, that was negotiated, and that's what they negotiated. The Teamsters was a different story. And like Ken said, they were the economy was rolling, everything was good. They were adamant on came in at 10% and was stuck on 8 and so on and so forth. And we ended up getting them down to this 5 and felt fortunate to do that. If the economy would have kept rolling, that wouldn't even be an issue right now. The city, as you can see, the city is in good financial condition. The revenues are up. Sales revenues are good. We're able to hold our employees to a acceptable rate increase in their salary. And you vote on this, I don't, but I feel that the non-union people should be entitled to the 5%.
So questions, Karen? Do these non-union employees have the opportunity to be union members, or is there not a union available to them?
There's
of the non-union employees, there's exempt and non-exempt employees. There's one, four, five, there's six exempt, which is basically all the supervisors, department heads.
They can't be.
So all the rest, by signing a letter, submitting it to either union, in 30 days, they're in. That's all they have to do, sign a letter, request to be admitted, 30 days later, they're in the union.
So I guess my question then would be, have these non-union members, besides the exempt that you can't do anything about, have they at some point said, no, I don't want to be a union member? I know in my union, in my work, I have that opportunity. I can be a union member if I want to or not, even though it's a union shop. And the risk I take by saying I don't want to be a union member is I lose out on the benefits that the union members get. So that's the rationality behind the question.
The answer to the question, if I understood it right, was of the non-exempt, non-union employees, have they opted out of belonging to a union? At least to my knowledge, they've never solicited to be in a union nor asked to be in a union. So I don't think they've had to make that decision. But again, they could, by a simple letter of request to join, in 30 days they could be in a union.
I couldn't tell if Ken Kaler was on my side or not, because he's saying 3 years ago we gave him 5% and that was good back then. Now we have a chance to update and redo for our non-union employees, and we can see we're at a minus.
Well, I think it was a three. Didn't we do step it up? Didn't we? It hasn't. When we negotiated this, wasn't it a smaller amount?
Yeah, it was.
The first year?
It was 2.5, right. Going to 3.
It was cut in half, and then it stayed low, and then it went, this year it went up. But we were fortunate enough to negotiate, I think, a three the last 2 years.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. 2.5, 3, 3.
It was a step.
And Teamsters were 5, 5, and 5.
I don't think it's fair that people say when CPI goes up 8%, they want 8%, and then when it goes down, they still want 5%. I mean, if we're going with the CPI, let's go with it. I mean, the union contracts are, yeah, they're in the books. We can't do anything about that, but we can evaluate this one on a yearly basis and see right where we're at.
Well, unfortunately, they negotiate a three-year contract.
The non-unions don't.
No.
Let's set the precedent. Say CPI goes down, we're not giving you a raise, and extend that to the unions. They want to live and die by the CPI.
I think when this contract is up and when we go back to negotiate again, I think a lot of this is going to come to fact. We say, hey, this thing was at 5% when it was a minus 1.9. Now where's that 2% at? Are we going to negotiate that back when we negotiate our new three-year contract? So I think we can play that game with them, but as far as union-wise, we can't do that until we go into negotiations on that. But I think we can play that game.
All four contracts are up at the end of 2010, so we'll be at the table for 2 or 3 months.
Well, I can guarantee you the minimum they'll ask for is the 5% that the non-union people got for 2010.
It depends on what the economy does. If the economy stays flat like it is right now, I think it puts us in a good bargaining position. If the economy is taken off, maybe not so good. You know, that remains to be seen.
In my past experience with negotiating a few union contracts over the years, that is actually the case of what happened. And I know several times they held their line. They didn't necessarily go backwards, but they held their line for a year or two and didn't have any increase at all, which made up somewhat of that difference, so that we didn't get that. And I think we can play that with them this next go around.
Not if you're giving non-union people 5%. Anyway, plus members of our team are only getting 3%.
What's that?
Members of our team are only getting 3%.
Public works, yes. Right, that's so what they negotiated.
Why don't we put our salary people, non-union people, with them instead of the higher players?
move into the police department?
Yeah, I'm done. I've said, well, you know, if it's higher than 3%, I'll just vote no on the budget. So that's all I can do as an individual.
The one benefit, the insurance and the medical claims that we pay, not too much of a change there. And then this is the police operations, hourly benefits, down to the bottom line. Chief, Charlie, even with the salary increases, it's only about a $6,000 difference from the previous year. So he did some cutting on some line items, jail services. Investigation. This is this year on beginning October 1st, he moved an officer into investigation. And so we've taken this budget out of patrol and put it into investigation. So you wouldn't see a budget there from last year.
Could you do that again, please?
Yeah, this is investigation. We've got an officer and an investigator.
Okay. This is a new position?
No. It's not. It's a current patrolman. That was moved into investigation, so it didn't create a position. It just reassigned the position.
Not a new position, just a different title.
Yeah.
Okay.
Code enforcement. There is no budget in code enforcement in the police department this year. Code enforcement been moved into the planning building department. So that went down. Criminal justice training was reduced by about $2,000. Facilities budget went down by about $250. And this is patrol. And here's the officer that was moved to investigation right here, this blank. That's the salary. And then this is the benefits portion here. So patrol actually went down, even 5% increase in salaries actually went down almost $30,000.
You moved code enforcement.
Yeah.
Didn't really go down.
We're wise to those budget moves.
You moved code enforcement to planning committee. Yeah.
Yeah, that'll show up in the total at the end of the police. That wouldn't show up in this one.
Right.
I mean, you moved the code enforcement and the officer to investigation. That was $70,000 there, so you had $70,000 to $755,000, and that gives you your true number.
In comparison.
Yeah.
Is that correct, Mike?
Pardon me?
If you take the investigative guy,
yeah,
and put him back in here,
yeah,
and you take the code enforcement and put him back in here, then your number would be
The investigation would add to the patrol budget, but code enforcement wouldn't add to the patrol budget. It'll add, there's a bottom line for the police department that we haven't gotten to yet.
Okay.
It would be in that bottom line.
But the investigator.
Yeah, the investigative portion was the patrol budget. You'd have to add $72,000 to that to get your true picture, which is coming up, right? Keep going. Yeah. $755,000 plus $72,000, that's your true increase.
Right. That's right.
Which is over $50,000.
So then we have dispatch, and let's see. Dispatch was moving up by about $21,000. And part of that is this service contract here. Went up by 7, but then of course this telephone budget disappeared too, because it's the telephone is to this Quest dispatch now.
Chief, dispatch is, equipment is specialized to where Stan can't help you much on that. It takes a special.
Stan helps out with quite a bit with the regular CPUs and things, but all of the Motorola radios and the voice recorders, that's all proprietary.
Okay.
Equipment that we have to buy contracts. So, and there's also in that there's an additional $6,000 that we're on the hook for to upgrade Spillman because the state's moving away from uniform crime reporting into the new NIDR system. We were able to start off and give up $6,000 towards that last year, which bought us about a 50% reduction in the cost of the program altogether between Adams County and ourselves. So that's another reason why I'm not going to do it.
Okay.
The RUAD grant is gone now, so that was not budgeted. The RUAD paid for itself because every time we had an expense, we got reimbursed from Adams County. So not only did the expenditure side go away, but the revenue side go away as well. So the police operating budget is $1,916,000. Last year it was $1,982,000, but then again, you take code enforcement and RUAD away, and you got probably over $135,000 in those two alone. And then and for capital, the chief is asking for $65,000 for two patrol cars in his ongoing replacement. So and then this is money that we transfer every year to the Left One Reserve Fund in case, and that's the fund that's being built up in case a Left One person has to go into a nursing home or something, and we would be obligated to for that. So this is building up reserves in case something like that. Total law enforcement, $1,991,000, and last year it was $2,057,000.
Mike, let me make a comment on that left reserve there. We have, again, we have 10 Left One retired officers. All but one of them are covered by insurance. There's one that is non-insurable, so that helps, this fund will help pay his expenses, and then the insurance covers 80%, so the city's still liable for 20%, like a nursing home, like Mike said. So that's why we need money in that fund.
Where is the money we pay for insurance? Is it in the police or is it in the general fund?
It's up here. When I first started out here.
Because you're telling me you have nine left employees that you're paying. Okay.
This is where we pay
right.
for.
There's the insurance. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then they submit medical claims to us for prescription, well, for just about anything actually.
Everything from Nicorette gum to
name it.
They get reimbursed for that.
Tell me about it.
Can Mike, the bottom number for police department? Can you
negotiate that one?
Right there.
Yeah.
This one here.
Yeah, can you add $135,000 to that?
Right here?
Yeah.
Sure.
In your head. That way we're more apples to apples with because of RUAD and code enforcement.
Right.
RUAD is a pass-through.
Yeah, but it was still in the budget, now it's not. So you would see the effect on the revenue side, but now this is the true, if we would have had, well, I see what you're saying. Yeah, that was,
it didn't cost me.
But it's a comparison number, though. Because the 2009 included the RUAD expenses. And so if you did that, even though it's a zero effect,
It's about around $70,000, and that's close to code enforcement, And of course, we move pulling the port curb on either building or plant.
So if you pull a row out, it's about an even break.
Yeah.
Yeah. So good.
Then we have, next we have the fire department, and well, we have contract with the fire department, and I think we take 2 years of the CPI and average them, and they have one decent year and one pretty bad year, because this past year was a CPI. And so I think the average was only like 2.15% or something around there. I have the number, but so this increase in our contract wasn't that big this year. See, back here it went up from 16, it was about $7,000. This year it's about around four, a little over four, close to five.
Yes, a 2.5% increase seems very reasonable to me. For all aspects of the budget.
And now we're moving into park and recreation, and we developed this column over here, and we call it the red zone. And the committees that we spoke with had items that ended up in this red zone for discussion purposes. And the first one is the salary and benefits for a park and rec director. So we picked a salary of $45,000, and the equivalent in benefits for that would be about $18,350. So that's about $63,350.
So I've forgotten who was on the committee, but the recommendation from the committee, if I remember right, I think it was Eleanor.
Dan,
are you on?
Who else was on
me?
The park committee?
Mark, yeah. And the committee wanted to discuss this with the full council, whether or not to hire that position.
Mark Canella,
huh? I guess. Dan, I know you're a proponent of this.
Yeah.
Could you maybe kind of tell the council why you'd like to see this?
Parks,
and then there's definitely an opponent here, so.
The parks thing has become pretty large. We have soccer tournaments, people playing soccer all over town and trying to get those kind of things done. Baseball tournaments going on. I understand the slow pitch softball's coming back. Little League with a pool. Everything is connected with that. But somebody has all of that under their wing and takes care of it at one time. Debbie had a whole list of things that that person could do, and I neglected to bring that with me. But there are a lot of things that person could accomplish throughout the year rather than trying to find somebody to take care of it when it comes up, or dump it off on some other, whether they're union employees or non-union employees. Somebody's going to get dumped on to take care of those kind of things, the permits and all that sort of stuff that goes with it. And it just seemed to me that if we're talking about adding another park in some way, and doing some of those kind of things that would come up, it would be reasonable to have somebody that would be responsible for all those things and see to it they got done on time. Also, somebody that would have time to do PR and find people to come in and do tournaments and those kind of things. So it just seems like to me it's a reasonably good idea at that point. So when I suggested, I didn't say anything about, I didn't consider the salary. I don't know what it would amount to. Whether other cities pay that much or not, I don't know.
The 45, we did look at other cities, and the 45 we thought would be a building year. So
So we put that in. It is a little bit low compared to other cities our size, but if the council wanted to approve this position, we would hope that the first year that they would generate programs that would generate revenue to help support that position. But it's up to the council.
Well, if you all know me, I'm all about sports and parks and recreation, but I think it's managed quite well now without this position. And when we do get another park and facilities in that park that need to be managed, I would then consider it, but at this time I do not feel it's needed.
Any other?
I guess I'm kind of for a park and recreation director, but I feel the same way as Mark, that
timing.
Yeah, timing. When we get that other park, I see a bigger need for that than it is right now.
I guess I'd probably have to agree that I think the timing is everything, and maybe it's you get another park and the economy's taken off and things are doing better around us. There is going to be some point in time where there will be a park director here, maybe soon. You know, you had another 40-acre park or 30-acre park, and everything that goes with it. Next year might be the year, but maybe this year's not. I think you got a great idea, Dan, but I think maybe you're just a year early.
It came out of several years ago, and at that time, why the school district and the city were in cahoots on did the parks and the recreation and that
community
sort of thing.
Schools, wasn't so, it? Didn't community schools start out city and
yeah
and
so that's kind of the way it started, and then it just kind of evolved. Nate took that and let's see. Dave Johnson was the city director at that time. And I even called him and asked him about it.
Go ahead, Ken.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I think it's a good idea, great idea. I don't think there's anything wrong with it, and I think it's good. And another thing that would help our staff in this office, because it would take some pressure away from them, that this director could take care of. But like I say, I think the timing might not be quite right here until we get that other park developed and get it going, and maybe even before that other park is developed, so he could help us put it together, maybe a later down the road situation than 2010 or something like that, to kind of get the ball rolling for the following year.
Yeah, that's okay. I planted a seed.
No, that's a good. Somebody's got to plant it.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of looking at this, you know, that's just for the person. This person's also going to need an operating budget. They're going to want to do promotions, and it's going to cost them to do their job that we're asking them to. So I think there's a lot more involved in that. And I think when we have all those facilities ready for them to take over, it'll be a great time.
Tackle on fourth down in the red zone.
That's why we call it the red zone.
In this area here, the budget didn't change from last year. Here, pool programs, I think it went down some. We didn't budget quite as much for the lifeguards for next year. Concessions, we actually increased the budget. We feel like if we put more into the concessions, then we'll get more out of it. They had a very successful year this past year. Chemicals, supplies. But anyway, a drop of about $7,000 in that.
Mike, you left a line blank up there for L&I benefits. That might change that bottom number unless there's an explanation.
Oh,
12, yeah.
Up here?
Yes. That was
before I did that. Oh. Yeah.
Right there, yeah.
Yeah.
Just a quick comment. That
claim this week, last week, excuse me, from a previous lifeguard, and we are denying that and we're moving through that process.
So total recreation, and then old facilities, pretty much the same. No change in the budget. Park facilities, I went up about, looks like about 27,000. Electricity went up. Irrigation expense went down. Oh, I know here. With all the work that went into the parks and the use of all Department of Works personnel, this public works allocation, of course you don't see it here, but it's going to be around, see, about 100, it's 125,000 or more over this budgeted number. So for next year, I increased the budget by about $25,000. And we have a lot of things in the park capital, but Jay tells me that it's just big, almost all of it, in fact, is going to be contracted out in 2010 instead of using our public works personnel. So this 200,000 might not be realistic. It might be a little bit high.
Well, that should be somewhat offset by what we're not paying the Department of Corrections personnel.
Remember, we just got to save money and hire three employees this past summer.
And that doesn't come out of here. That's in the street fund. Even though it's in the public works allocation portion of the street fund, I mean,
I guess we have, you know, X amount of employees and we pay them X amount of money. And so the bigger piece of the pie is going here. That means a smaller piece of the pie has to go somewhere else.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Water and sewer, for instance.
Okay.
Yes. Okay, now we're going to get into capital expenditures, and this will create some discussion. Just about everything on this list, I believe, we discussed at the retreat, ball field lighting. And this ball field lighting, they're in separate things. It ultimately would all be done together, but this is the Northwest Field. It's a carryover from last year. That wasn't done this year, so that's being carried over to the next year. This is the streets portion of the parks portion of a new service track. This is a key slide for the pool. The lights at the new basketball court, this would be part of the lighting program. And then the east ball field lighting is, and so those three items would all be together. Skateboard park, this is a 2-year set aside, so this would be the first year in a set aside of $100,000 for a skateboard park. This is the Cooley Corridor kiosk, and the budget committee that met on this felt like this wasn't a good project and wanted to move it out here for discussion. And then we have the Qantas Parks Lansing.
Can I make some comments on that now, or you want me to do it later?
I just thought I'd introduce them, and okay. Then we could go over them if that would be okay.
Okay.
The pool parking expansion was estimated to be 70. The Qantas Park parking expansion, I believe this estimate is coming lower, if I'm not mistaken, Jay. It's at 80,000, so I'll change that. And then this is a snow cone ice machine for concessions, $3,500. And this is a community visitor center, and this is for discussion tonight. Councilman Taylor has got some material, or maybe he's already passed it out.
Yeah.
And it does show on the capital facility plan, on the first page of the capital facilities plan, it's kind of laid out there so you can see it.
Yeah, it's in that new stuff I put out here, that first page. It's got a lot of that in there. I think he added that
this loose stuff you have here that was on your desk when you came in.
We'll start with the kiosk.
Okay. So you want to start with the kiosk?
I like the way you kind of set the things that were talked about in budget committees off to the right side. I mean, it really helps expedite and move through things. So, Ken, I think this is your project.
Well, yeah, that, as you've got a label there, it's Cooley Court or kiosk. That is also including that little, well, what we're calling Centennial Park. That $10,000 is partly for that park. What we're trying to do to put together on that thing is getting a lot of volunteer help to go in and do something with that area rather than look like an eyesore like it is right now. This whole last year was almost an insult to Othello when you had somebody say, oh yeah, we got a walking path up there, if you could find it in the weeds, whatever. And part of this money was to go to clean that up. We need some water and electricity. Part of it will be used in this kiosk, yes. But we've already appropriated some lights for that particular little park. We need electricity to it. We need, if we decide to develop that into a, I know the word mini park is bad language, but Centennial Park sounds better. And we, as a Centennial Park, are going to try to put at least $2,500 into this, maybe more. We have proposed a budget of what we've got in mind to do this park with. The Cooley Court or kiosk, as I'm calling it there, is a portion of it, which the city, half of that is for the city, and half of that is for the Cooley Court. I've got some outside money that I could probably put $2,000 to $5,000 into this thing if I have to. And all of us are going together to donate some money. I myself am probably going to put $500 into this to put a couple benches there for the head of this walk path. So it's not totally just for this kiosk. It's for the community. It's a portion of that walk path to finish and develop something. I know we don't have a street there, we don't have the parking yet, but at least we could clean up that little triangle corner in there. We've got a couple Boy Scouts that's already went in and done a lot of work on this thing all down the line, and it just kind of ties in with it. So that's where your $10,000 is going.
Hey Ken, where is this park? I mean,
well, this is the thing. It's at the head of our walking trail on Main Street, Cunningham, right west of Mirastar.
Oh.
Right by where we had the
bleachers. We had the dedication for the walking path this summer. Right. Okay.
It's on the west side of the walking path?
Yeah.
East side, yeah.
And what I want is kind of a staging area there if we have a parking spot. But anyway, when you come up to that walking path, we'll have a couple benches there so you can sit down and change your shoes, whatever you want to do, and then you can continue on down the walking path. At the same time, we're proposing to put this Cooley Corridor kiosk there, which shows what the Cooley Corridor is all about on one side. It shows what Othello area is all about as far as what we've got to offer to people. So that's kind of the tie-in of this whole thing. And I think that's a good location for that. And we're doing this in 7 other communities. And I wanted to step out and say Othello's the first, but we'll see where it goes from there. But we kind of proposed it as a Centennial Park to kind of tie in with our total theme for next year.
Well, you're talking about $10,000 that doesn't goes to infrastructure, not the actual kiosk itself on land we don't even own.
This is the situation that stands there. I think the county put $124,000 into that particular area, $144,000. They didn't own it. It's on a easement. The easement is 60 feet wide. It belongs to Bureau of Reclamation. The walking path took 30 feet of that easement and put the walking path down it and across. I mean, it goes from one side to the other, but 30 feet of that easement is for your walking path. And there's a possibility that we could get the whole total little corner there donated to us for the city for this. So if you talk about we don't own it, yeah, we don't own that walking path either, but it's there.
I thought we were told last time that that land was owned by Walmart.
It is owned by Walmart, but the United States Bureau of Reclamation has a 60-foot easement
it. There. Yeah.
And all we have to do is get an okay from Walmart to do what we want to do, or they may even donate the land to the city because it's of no use to them, actually. But I'm not going to negotiate that until I know that we're going to do something with it.
Any other council comments here on this Cooley Corridor kiosk?
So it's possible that if we budget the $10,000 and we can't get the property, then we won't even use that $10,000.
Right.
That would be a condition of the use of it, that we have use of the property. I do like the idea, I like the concept. I'm held up on the parking a little bit. If the piece of property is for sale there, they come through and decide to plot the street through there, like the cutout is, then we're going to have a parking problem for that. That's the only spot I'm held up on. And I wish I seen a little bit of a plan or a development for that, just in case, because I'd hate to put a lot of money into it. And all of a sudden, we don't have any parking for it for the use of it. But I am willing to put it in this year to see where it goes. See if we can.
What if you put it in and then somebody buys that piece of ground over there and kind of drives through your whole plan?
Well, now let's put everything on the table here. Ken says it's west of the walking path. Jay says it's east of the walking path. Where is this thing?
No, I say the property is west of Mirastar.
Yes, and when I said is it east or west of the walking path?
The kiosk would actually be east of the walking path itself.
Okay.
So
there's a little pot of land there that if you put a kiosk in there, I bet you couldn't park two cars in there.
We're not parking any cars in there, period.
Okay, then what's the point of having a kiosk if you can't park your car and get out and look at it?
Maybe for the joggers, huh?
You tell me where to put one then.
I'm just not going to put $10,000 into maybe a kiosk that there's no place to park to look at it. That's all I have to say about it.
Council, anybody else have any input?
Well, the parking deal is a lot of people get to use it, I guess. That's where I'm stumped also. I like your thought, though. The design you brought that one day, I thought was pretty neat.
Well, we need to find a place to put it. I mean, maybe this isn't the place, Ken, but there has got to be a place to put it here because it benefits the community, the area, educates the area. It would clean up that area, but that area is kind of undecided what it's going to be out there.
True.
You know.
And to me, the $10,000 is a start. Like I said, it may not get used. Ken has some things to put together. And if he can get those things all lined up together, then with this $10,000, he'll be ready to go with one that's on a good
side. Why can't we take it out of the budget if he can get everything all lined up,
mm-hmm.
come back as a budget amendment, come back and present it to council as a budget amendment?
think you're the next column, the
Kiwanis Park.
Kiwanis Park parking. The Kiwanis Park lights, Kiwanis Park lights and cameras, $65,000.
We need to do that whether we put a parking lot in or not. So I think it should be separate.
The police department, the IT, Stan, and Jay have looked at the parking lights and cameras several times, and we feel that's a pretty good number for that, $65,000.
Do you have a way of separating it, like Councilman Spohr? Do you have any ideas?
I talked with Stan today, and he thinks he has located cameras for approximately $30,000. And the reason the cameras are so expensive is that they have to be able to communicate with the police department, so they can read them on their monitors and stuff like that. So this isn't just a plain camera. There's much more to it than that. But then he thinks that he might need to be able to get them cheaper than $30,000. So it looks like it's going to be approximately $30,000 for cameras and around $35,000 for lights.
And one works with the other. If you got a dark spot, right. I mean, if it's black out there, the camera's not going to see anything unless you have a light.
The cameras need a server so that they can show up in the screen and dispatch. That's the extra cost.
I got a question for Steve. Will they go on a pole?
Put you on the spot for a minute.
Sorry. They go on top of the poles, in fact.
Once these cameras are up in operation, and I know we can view the current one in here, but is it capable that the officers could also receive this on their laptop in their car?
Yes.
Could it be streamed to them?
Yes.
So that way, if they're on their way, they know where there's a problem.
It's possible, and if we keep it all the same, we can also tie it to the school cameras because they're on the same. They use the same software program that we use, and that was kind of we talked about it before we actually put those in. The thing with cameras, though, is that our patrol area is not all that big, so by the time an officer sits there and tries to get it up on the screen, he can already be there and see what's going on firsthand. So, but they would come into hand. Definitely be very handy in a long drawn out thing or just as a matter of watching something from a distance.
So are the cameras movable or are they permanently set? You set them where you want them to go?
Yeah, these would all be PTZs with this pan, tilt, and zoom.
That was the additional cost also versus the stationary mounted ones. They are movable.
So at City Hall they can move them around and look here at the
dispatcher. They'd be able to move them, get it automatically set to whatever we wanted to be with them. So. But if we're going to go with them, it would be best to just go with the best ones right away instead of putting this fixed cameras.
Time out. I'm not up on kids' play stuff. But $20,000 for a kiddie slide? What do we have to do? Put in a landing area for them, and just like it is for the big slide? What?
This is in the pool. This is in the pool.
Like a little shotgun slide.
So they'll go right into the pool.
They'll go to the pool. Yes, the slide doesn't go into the water.
Yeah.
The kids will land in the water.
It's mounted. It'll be mounted in the zero entry area.
Yeah.
There's two toys there now, and there's a slot for another toy. And if you've been to the Moe's Lake Aqua Park, they have a slide there that's in the water, and it's got water spraying down the slide, and the kids go up one side and slide down the other into the water. Yes, it seems excessive for what you get, but I guess that's the going rate for pool toys nowadays.
Toys. The Moe's Lake one is packed. That little kid slide there is used all day long. So that was one of the things I heard from people was there's nothing for little kids to do.
Yeah.
Really?
I believe the lifeguards asked all the kids continuously, what would you like to see, what would you like to see, and they talked to Jay, and this was the number one thing that the kids wanted from an informal survey.
And nothing against it.
Good question.
This next item involves parking expansion. The committee moved that out into this column. I'll let the committee address that.
We're already doing quite a bit here at Kiwanis Park. We need to incorporate another park into our city. And it comments that I have heard is, you know, maybe we'll hold off on this and develop a park to play soccer that has lots of parking and maybe the need isn't there for parking in the park. But I do think we need the cameras and the lights, one or the other. I think maybe both is a little much in one year, where we're talking about putting in a huge park here in the next year. I wasn't at the committee meeting.
But we had a range between what, 100,000 to 40,000? Was the different lots. That's why we put it out there, because we didn't know what the council wanted. But another thing to think about, if we decide not to do that, if you go down to the south lot and look at it, it needs to be topped and recoded. It is in bad shape. It's just turning, it's just falling apart is what it's doing. We were down there looking at it the other day, and it's like, we need to put something there just to redo that parking lot, because it's not going to be there shortly. It's like deteriorating rather rapidly. It's crumbling into little pieces is what it's doing.
Pretty bad shape.
Mm-hmm. So, I think it's the same way up at the pool, isn't it? If I remember right, so I walked through it.
Yeah. No.
We have some issues with our existing parking lots.
Parking lots, huh?
Yeah. parking lots, sure. So I don't know if we want to try to do something that way, maybe. But it won't address the issue with that gazebo that's there that has hundreds of people in there.
Used a lot. I think that the people that did come when we were talking about Kiwanis Park, you know, we talked about parking, we talked about people parking in front of their houses, we talked about security, things that go on after dark. We've implemented hours that kind of will help there. The lights and the cameras would be a big plus, because I think after dark there's some things going on there that shouldn't be, and this will stop that. Maybe we need to look at parking lot maintenance there instead of adding additional parking at this time, and then concentrate on building a big park for these kids to play soccer in places, and we'll incorporate a lot of parking, a third of the area of parking or whatever, but whatever the formula is, but that would be my thought.
I would agree with that. I just don't, I went up there and looked, and I admit I don't have an answer to the parking problem, but as we formed the vision for this town, it wasn't my vision when I looked at that, stood there and looked, to put a parking lot in the park. It just didn't work for me. But I would be in favor of if we do roads this year, to get some asphalt on that. Hopefully it won't cost that much, but it might be half of that.
Could you have somebody look at that and see what it's going to cost?
I could put together some square footage estimates for.
Like Tim says, you know, you let that go another 2 years and you'll have to start over. You may have to now.
It's going
to
require some.
So are we going to put that in there for both parking lots?
Meaning the pool one, too?
Kiwanis and the pool.
Mm. Yeah.
The pool one's going downhill pretty bad, too.
Well, you're back up to the 80 then again.
we're going to review the street budget next Monday night,
So if we can have the rest of this week to get a better number, we can come back and put it in there, and if that'll work for everybody.
I think you need to take that out as presented and include both of those parking lots in the street program or addendums to
right,
the street program.
Okay.
So the council can.
The full parking expansion,
so
refresh my memory,
just
was
take
that
out that 80,000
going up the site up.
Yeah.
Then we'll come back and fill that number in next Monday night, Mike.
With the pull-in parking on that street.
To the pool, anyway.
Just that easy. Just saved $80,000 like that.
No, we moved it.
And you're correct.
Ken?
But it's going to have to reflect back here, not the street.
$70,000 that Dan's talking about here, I think that's for the continuation of Pine Street.
Extend the parking lot all over the street.
Yeah.
Pine.
Right.
Yep, that's the 70.
So that include the sidewalk also?
Yes.
It does? Wow.
35 parking spaces, sidewalk expansion.
Is that what it comes out? Yeah, I know we.
It's an estimate, yes.
We figured that out one time. Couple of other issues on there. One that Mike doesn't have on there yet.
This expenditure here, is that
electricity
run the lights?
Our skateboard,
is that what that costs?
Park.
Yeah.
Are we gonna hold off on that till we put that into a new park rather than taking this portion to one of our present parks, or what's the idea on that one?
That was the thought, was to hold off.
The
Well, it's in there.
Skateboard park?
It's a tier.
Yeah.
It's in there, Ken.
I know it's in there, but what I'm saying is that location, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Yeah, might that be better once we develop a new park, maybe incorporate that in there at that time? Because I don't know that there's any room in any of our parks that we have now to put that.
But this is to save up money.
But I think what it is to save it up to where whenever we do it, it's there.
Yeah,
if we end up buying park property next year, we'd already have that $100,000 ahead of the game.
Yeah.
For the savings.
Yeah.
I just wanted to clarify that we're not going out here and putting one of our present parks.
Yes, it was not the intent of the committee to put the skateboard park in one of our present parks. Just to start a fund so that when we have a place for it, the money is there to start it, to get it going.
Now, Mike, can you put the rest of that up?
Pardon?
Can you put the rest of that up?
Is that on there?
I think you're going to take that Cooley Corridor 10,000 out, and if Ken can get things put together, he may come back to the council with an addendum to the budget.
Well, what we talked about this afternoon, this one that we brought out here, you know, just passed out.
Oh, well, we left two items up. The one that I have, the last one with the discussion on it, is the community visitor center. Is that the one?
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't put any dollars
in
here.
Did you have anything on that?
Okay. I didn't put any dollars in here or anything because I knew we wanted it for discussion.
Okay.
So.
You want a copy of it?
Oh, I, yeah.
So now the community visitor center.
This is, you know, you got to plant the seed. Somebody has to plant the seed. And I know Ken is working on a visitor center to try to get people stopped out here on Highway 17 or 26. Or I guess you just will go on this because you're kind of leaving off where Les Clemens was working on this.
Well, yeah, let me kind of clue you in on what happened in the past. In 2004, actually it was before that time, but actually the major part of 2004, we worked on proposing a visitor center for Othello. At that time, we even had the land donated for that particular visitor center. That opportunity no longer exists. We don't have to buy the property. I'll just be blunt with that portion of it. But we did go in and we kind of put together a plan or an idea of what we had in mind. I think you've all got it in your packets here. But we put a book together. We had several meetings. We worked on this thing for 2 years, I guess, or longer. And that was the time Les Clemens, he even sat on the council here, but he was tied up in the Cooley Corridor, as I am. I actually took his place. I still can't fill his shoes, but I tried. This thing kind of kept going, and it looked like we had a good shot at it, a very good possibility for some grant money. As you know, practically all of that grant money dried up about that time. It was about a 4-year period. You just well forget about even trying to send in for grant money because it wasn't available. So we kind of backed away from the thing. Well, my thought is to bring it back on the table again, but what I want to do with it is tie it in with the community center. We've been talking about this community center for 30 years, no problem, that I know of, at least, maybe longer than that. And maybe some of you think that that's crazy, maybe it's corralled around, I don't know. But instead of putting money into sports every time, we put $250,000 a year into sports, somewhere along the line. When have we done something for the other people in Othello? I mean, sports is great, and I don't condemn that, but there's time that the other things has to be looked at too. And what I'm trying to do is put this thing together as a visitor center and as a community center combined. We've got a lot of similarities. You've got a parking lot, for instance, to park people. You could use it for both. You've got a portion of a park that we could use for this. The overflow could go into the park or whatever. You've got visitors, tourism, as they call it. I know some people in Adams County says tourism doesn't exist, but I battle them guys every time I see them because I ain't going to back up on this. And I mean that truthfully. But we've got one heck of a potential. We've been working on this Cooley Corridor for 10 years, and we've come a long ways, and we've got national recognition. We've done a lot of things. There's other communities that want visitor centers. Maria Cantwell jumped in and bailed, or put a chunk of money into the pot, what they call Ice Age floods. If that Ice Age floods hadn't happened, we wouldn't be here today farming this land. We wouldn't be seeing what we've got out here. We wouldn't have this recreation center that we've got. We wouldn't have Grand Coulee Dam. There's a lot of things that involve in this. She took a chunk of money and put into a fund, and we just happened to be on the list that were part of Ice Age floods. We can, I think, nothing's in stone until you get the check, but I think we can get a good portion of the money out of the Ice Age floods to help build the portion of this visitor center. WSDOT, sure, everybody says they're broke, but maybe they are, maybe they aren't. We've got a possibility as Highway 17 develops, we can push an issue for a rest area and make it tie in with what we've got. But you gotta have a little vision to realize what I'm trying to promote here. We can take this whole thing, tie it in with a community center, and have a place so we can meet. We do not really have a place in Othello that we can say, hey, we got 150 people coming to town. We don't have a location. Yeah, we might have a school, we may not. You know, sometimes you can get in school, sometimes you can't. But we need a place of our own. You've got ACDC. They come over, they have a big meeting. Where do they meet? They meet in the church. Nothing wrong with that, but it's just the idea. Is that what you want? Is that what we want, Othello? I mean, it's time that we step out and make a community center. All other communities, you've got one little town of Connell, they've had a community center for years. I hear a little good about it, I hear a little bad about it. Well, it's not filled enough, it's not taking the job. You can't always go that route. Take, for instance, this visitor center, the community center tied together. First thing I'm going to say is the operating costs. It's too much, too high. We can't subsidize them. What do we do today? We subsidize our pool, we subsidize our basketball courts, we subsidize our parks. We do all of this. And it's a portion that is just reality. You have to do that to a certain point. There's ways that this thing would come around and probably pay us back tenfold, but you can't see it in dollars and cents because you can't see it on paper. There's grants out there for operating expenses as well. And there's a golden opportunity in the next 3 years to get a lot of this money. All I'm asking is that this thing needs to be put up to where we can do it over a 3-year period. I'm not asking for a dime. All I'm asking for is to put a reserve in a fund so that we can have it as a match money for when we go after the big money. And that's basically what I'm doing. I just want to transfer money to a fund for this. If I go back and get the grant money to cover it, then I'll ask you to use some of that money for that purpose. And that's kind of where I stand on it. It's kind of up to you guys. Sorry about the long spiel.
Again, it's a good idea. It's been talked about for years. But it's a lot of money. You know, you're going to have to, it's kind of like our sewer project. You're going to have some help.
And you got to start putting it in. Make it happen.
I would compare it more to our pool, and I think I mentioned this last time, and I agree with you on the community center. I mean, it burns me that a local couple gets married and I have to drive to Connell to go to the reception. I mean, that just doesn't work well with me. But the only thing I disagree with is I would never do councilmatic bonds in the amount of $3.2 million as a proposal. And if you take that to the vote of the community, like we did the pool, and get them to approve that, then I'm in.
The only reason I put that down there, I just put it as a possibility. What I'm looking at is going after federal money. There's money in the U.S. Department of Transportation for a lot of this particular funding. There's money from education standpoint, because it would be an educational part of it. There's money from WSDOT. There's money from recreation. They may not have any money today, but I have already talked to that committee, and they are on board with this project. They think it's a great deal. It's maybe bad timing, yeah. But in 3 years, this thing might turn around a whole bunch. But I want to get the thing started and get it rolling. That's what I'm after.
Just last week, the city of Royal City just picked up a grant for $197,000. They're building a community center out at their golf course, a small facility, because they had problems of gatherings and meetings, and so that's what they're using it for. I look at this as a seed. I'm all fighting for a community center. A few years back, we had a large contingency of all the citizens and everything, and we took a survey. This was before we started to get started on the pool and the needs. And the greatest thing that came out of that was a community center. There was a lot of call for a community center. So I'm all for this. And I think this money is just the seed money just to start. We're not going to spend it in this budget, but we're starting to save it. I think by doing that, then that's committing the council that saying, yeah, we want to do this project. We want to go on with it in the future. And here's our money to start that, to say that. and that will give us some matching funds if we have grants out there, and it will help us find those other monies that are available to.
I don't have a problem with putting $100,000 away. We're not spending it, so using the seed money and see what happens. Who knows? I'd love to see a community center here. But I hear the junior high has something now, doesn't it? I'm not sure. I haven't seen it, so. But still, it'd be nice to have a something that people can gather and have weddings and different things, class reunions or.
Yeah. At this point, we're having to leave town for all of that kind of stuff. Or
pay $2,500 to rent a building just right on in this town.
And I think, too, it'll give you an incentive to you that maybe we could have more motels around this area, you know. I mean, they look at it, what have we got? And somebody that comes in wants to have something or show something, well, you don't have any motels, so we're not going to stop there. We're just going down the road somewhere that does that. So it's kind of a catch-22, which do you do first to make it happen?
And we're talking community center here. Council okay with that?
I'm not.
Okay.
Put a deadline.
I keep it up there.
And so what do you want to put in?
Well, we're just going to reserve ear tag $100,000 for a future community center, if it doesn't ever happen, we don't spend the money.
You got a bill. Yeah. Good thing I don't have a pacemaker.
Want to borrow one?
The chief got a defibrillator.
Okay. We might need it before we're done.
Okay. Move right on.
Now we're getting into the planning, code enforcement, building department. And here is the code enforcement budget now in this section. Now we move into the planning division here. It's going up, and I think I can pinpoint some things here. Right here, this is our contract planner. $38,004, that was not budgeted last year, but this was budgeted. We budgeted $20,000 here, and it's not. So there's a kind of a net difference of about really, the secretary benefits was actually up here. All the benefits were in one line item until we got our new software. Now each person has their own benefits line item, so that's why this is. So it is basically the same as this here. Let's see, down here we added $12,000 professional services for plat review, and that is a revenue producer. So we put $12,000 into revenue. So this is a wash, this line item, but it does.
I'm sorry, could you scroll back up to that? I missed the salary there. No. Yes. Let's see. Oh, secretary. Okay. So everything we're paying for our contract building went into planning.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right. Right here. Yeah.
Okay. Because the salary was split before on our salary person.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
A question did come up in committee. About building valuation used by Safe Built, and they were going off of one table that was not what the council has adopted. We have corrected that. We are, Daryl and I are reviewing costs relative to Safe Built and maybe doing it in-house. Ken asked that. Daryl is a certified building inspector also, so that might be a benefit to us. And we'll bring that to you right after the first of the year. It's going to take the rest of this year to figure those things out, but something that the committee asked us to look at.
And then we get down near the library, and there's a big difference. We are no longer involved in the pass-through. We have $3,000 in there for repair and maintenance, since that is our building, and we are responsible for that.
Well, since MCL doubled what they're charging us, we're supposed to double the rent. It's fair and appropriate. That would be on the revenue side.
We could... By contract, we could send them a notice if you want.
Oh, they got enough. They got enough problems there with him. With Columbia Library.
I want to bring some of them back.
There is an issue with that building, though, the maintenance on it and the upkeep. That's a very old building, and every year we spend several thousand dollars to keep it up. Mm-hmm.
This is the total general fund budget. There isn't a large change. Of course. We know that $100,000 in capital for software in 2009 wasn't repeated in 2010, so that made a difference. The RUAD grant went away, so that made a difference of another $60,000. That's the bottom line of the budget. I will be coming to council with a. budget amendment for 2009. Public Works allocation in the Parks Department exceeded budget by about $125,000. So I'm going to have to come to council for a budget amendment. And I've got new numbers that I'll be putting in, so I'll be looking at year end a little bit fresher. And what I would like to do when I do ask for that budget amendment is there'll be a little bit of excess because you're never sure at the end of the year totally what the costs are going to be.
Well, back to my pie theory, when you add $125,000 to general revenue or general, it's got to come out of somewhere else.
My year-end estimates included what I want to do. So when we look at this number right here, the beginning fund balance for 2010 is our carryover from 2009. Now that carryover doesn't come from the 2009 budget; it comes from the actuals. And those aren't columns I have showing here because it would have been too confusing. Mm-hmm. So what we're looking at, the two columns we're looking at right here is the 2009 budget and the 2010 budget. We're not looking at the actuals. Well, this number right here is actuals, and I've already figured in those numbers because I already knew that the public works allocation was high in parks, and so that was in my year-end estimate, et cetera, et cetera. So with the revenue that we have coming in 2009 and with our estimated year-end expenditures, it should be pretty close to this number. I feel pretty confident about that. In fact, our revenue is looking actually better than I thought. Anyway, but I'll put that in my next report.
We're fortunate in that respect.
Yes.
The other communities can't say that.
It's just been an amazing year. You know, the state is giving us sales tax mitigation money, and our sales tax hasn't gone down. It's meeting our estimates, and It's just been incredible here.
That's good. Questions?
Next week will be street, water, sewer, and all the reserve funds.
That's all. Any, everybody done asking questions on the general fund budget?
So we're done with item three?
So are we voting on this next Monday?
I'm sorry?
Are we voting on what we just did next Monday?
No.
No.
Not? Okay.
23rd.
Okay. You're done, right, Mike?
Yes.
Okay. I thought maybe you were going to show a movie.
Oh, yeah.
Next item on our agenda is committee reports, council committee members. Any information on committees and meetings that you've had in the last week, 2 weeks?
We've got a meeting coming up at the Adams County Development Council next Thursday. Again, everybody's invited. It's in Ritzville this time. Some of the things that we're doing, we're very in the works of putting together a micro loan for businesses or somebody that's wanting to look at develop business. These are small micro loans for them where they would not be eligible at a bank or other place that would help. There's some seed money for some inventory or startup cost, and we're actively pursuing this right now, and it's going very well. We hope to have this up and running in a few months, which will be very good. And one other one is Northland Cable Committee. I think a while back we come to the council and said, asked a couple things, and I think the council needs to come to a decision on, because don't we have to get back with Northland Cable soon? There's a contract. And that's whether we want to have a public meeting for the input of the services with Northland Cable, and also right now cable charges are not part of the utility excise tax. The council also needs to decide with the new contract if that wants to be part of it.
I think it would be good to have a meeting. Can we influence programming and stuff like that type?
We could not influence, I don't think, individual channels. We could, the content is how I think he put it. There's some fine lines there that
basically you can suggest, but you can't dictate.
Right.
Yeah.
Definitely need to pursue the utility tax.
Yeah.
On the.
We have a council committee that will be meeting.
That will be doing that. Okay. Great. Go ahead, Ken.
On our SWAC track meeting. We had a meeting a couple weeks ago. Some good news for you. We were looking at, or will be looking at, our budget on our garbage disposal and all that stuff. And the there will be no increase in fees next year as far as dump fees. I think the city needs to look at negotiating a little bit with the collectors, because I'm hearing rumors that they're even maybe reversing a little bit and charging less this next year than what they did in 09. I'm hearing that by rumor from other cities. So it's something that we may want to negotiate a little bit. We may get a little return. I mean, we won't get anything back from what last year, but we may get a little bit of reprieve on increases and maybe a little back on that. They may go with that minus 1.19 or whatever, but anyway, it's a thought. But anyway, I just want to relay that to you, that I think that that's so we can hold our line on where we're at with that budget. Last Thursday, I attended the Columbia Basin Development League in Moses Lake. I think there was some 100, 120 people there. It was a very good meeting, I thought. There was a lot of information there. Sean, that was here, he done a great job emceeing that meeting. And there's a lot of positive thought on that, what's going on. I don't know whether you're aware of it yet, but they did receive some money to get started on this project. Matter of fact, they let a contract, and the surprising thing in this contract would surprise all of us. They were talking about siphon up at Weber Cooley, and they dug into the old siphons and whatnot that had been laying there dormant. They wasn't sure how much work they needed to do on them. They went in and took a look at them. Surprisingly, the boys did a good job back in those days, and it looks like they're going to almost be able to continue from where they were left and go from there. They had estimated about $50 million for that contract. They got a bid for $25 million, almost half of what they originally planned on that. It's just a start. They figure some of that will they'll go ahead and widen the portion of the canal, and that water should be delivered in 2011. That's a small portion of what they got in mind. But then as the bigger picture grows, when they get through with the study, instead of going out east here and going into a canal system like they originally planned with the East High Canal, they're now talking about pressurizing that line. It'll be a low pressure system. And if you happen to be in the right spot, you may be even able to do your circle. It'll be that much pressure. But some places only have about 5 PSI. So that's a kind of a new concept, because always before it was an open ditch and that's the way it was going. So that's kind of the train of thought that they're working on now. And I think they've come a long ways, and I think this thing is going to go, and it'll help take care of our Odessa aquifer problem that we've got with these wells. It'll help all the cities, because those wells will go offline, and then that way you'll have your water and go from there. One other quick one. My centennial committee, I was going to meet on Thursday at 4:30, but I'm supposed to be at that ACDC meeting, so we may have to do a little changing on that, but I'll get with my committee on that. And I think Shannon should say something about our gas summit meeting.
I was going to, as soon as you got done talking there. we had this past, what was it? Wednesday. We had our third natural gas summit. The first one we were kind of clumsy, and we got to plant the seed, right, Dan? We planted the seed on our first one. The second one we invited Williams Pipeline, major players, Grant County PUD got involved. We had representatives from the state level, the county level, city level, the federal level here. And we, after Pipeline 2, or the second meeting, we went into a committee, and the committees have done a great job in establishing our needs. We had a VISTA here. We had Sam.
What's Cascade?
Cascade here. We had the Williams Pipeline people here. I mean, just showed up. They were first ones in the door, and they're the big dog in this thing. And so we're working, and it looks like we could by 2013. Double our gas capacity here in our area, and it's looks like it's going to become a reality, and we've done that by kind of piggybacking up with Grant County and some of their endeavors, and they're supporting ours and we're supporting theirs, and together I think we're going to get this done. Mike with the port, we got port people there, and Mike's on this committee. And you guys have done a great job, and it looks like we're heading in the right direction as far as natural gas goes. Item number 5, unfinished business. Number 6, new business.
The only thing I'd like to inject at this point is, I know it's November, but the grass at City Hall and the park still looks fluffy, so I hope we haven't put the lawnmowers away yet.
Every Thursday.
We'll adjourn the workshop. Thank you.
They put fertilizer in the fall, and that's
they
that's
say
good.
That's the best time.
I know, but
yeah.
But I'm mowing the grass at home and the church because I did the same thing. So. People tend to give up in November, and you fall fertilizer.
No,
you got to keep going.
I think this is my favorite time of the year here in our area. It's the month of October. You know, that 18 degree weather we had on the 11th was kind of a shocker.
Right.
But, that's in a once in a lifetime deal.
Yeah. I mowed into December before.
That's what he was just saying. He's gonna hit his again.
Hey, do we need to start 6 again?
Yes.
How much do we have to go?
I think we covered the bulk of it. I think I think we can.
This is 3.5 hours.
Yeah. But it was a good 3.5 hours.
Oh yeah. No, the back
covered a lot here tonight. Yeah.
No, it's going to pasture.
I suggested that backyard. Just kill it.